Log Talk Radio.
Tune in and listen. Queens on a mission. Dripping the mic on Sunday nights, presenting you with 2020 visions. So join us this day and every Sunday night with the Mirror the Songstress on Blog Talk Radio. A for sure way to start your week off right. 2020 visions on Drip the Mic.
No regrets. No
regrets. Hey, it's Amira the Songstress.
No regrets.
You're tapped into 2020 vision of Drip the Mic Network. All is well. Stay focused. Hey, 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 you guys. We made it back in here another Sunday. I'm so excited. Yes, there we go. I like that. All right. And I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I have the wonderful, the phenomenal, the extraordinary Elijah Rock joining me today. You guys give him a welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to have a good time today. You know, we're bringing you all the talent, different talents from different walks of life. But before we do that, you guys know how I like to do it. I have a few shout outs that I want to give. First of all, I want to shout out my makeup artist, Leah. She beats this face, honey. Yes, she does. And also Bree. She keeps this hair together for me. You can get Leah at I Love Lee on Instagram, and you can get Brianna at Brianna Sheehy on Instagram as well. But first, I want to give a few shout outs. First, you know, I want to shout out family, my children and family. We actually, last week I was missing, and I'm just glad to be back today, but I was had to show a rerun because I had to go out of town. My family members, one of my family members passed away, and it was on the side of my children's family, and it was just very important to see my family together. It was very important to see my children and their siblings together. You know how blended families work, and sometimes brothers and sisters are not able to see each other as much. But we were able to bring those boys together and let them celebrate life, celebrate being with each other. And you know, we went for a sad occasion, but it turned into a major celebration just having them back together. So I want to shout out my boys. I call them Jadralik for Joshua, DeAndre, and Malik. So, yeah, show that for me.
Okay, I'm thinking I'm tired of my defeat. None of my bitches be mine. They could have been one of y'all, but y'all didn't see. I'm a scholar.
They were having such a good time. Yeah. Family, friends that are like family was in that video. The yellow boys was mine. Call them the yellow boys. The beige.
Snicker.
Poor babies, they get called all kinds of things. Light skinned folks, I just get called all kinds of things.
They be like, you look like a butterfinger. Hey, I was thirsty last week.
Right. We come in all shades and beautiful hues, you know.
That's right.
So next up, we have a video from the DJ Patton, and it's just, I don't know, I thought this was special because it's just a man, a black man honoring women, And I like to see that as much as I can. Show that. This was a TikTok video. Show that for me.
Ladies, I'm letting y'all know now, if you walking down the street and there's a dude on some weird stuff following you and you're not comfortable and you see me across the street or you see me somewhere, do not hesitate to come up. Let me know, and I promise you I'll act like your brother, your boyfriend, your best friend, whoever, and I'll make sure you get to where you're going. And fellas, use this sound. Let's get this blown up on TikTok so ladies can see all the faces of the men that got they back in a situation like this, so we don't have nothing crazy happening no more.
Yeah.
I'm with that.
You with it?
I'm with that. 100%.
I was just going to ask you how you felt about that.
Oh, yeah, that's what the book is about. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, you know, it's all,
yeah,
it's all relative.
But that's,
you'll see.
I affirm that.
Good, good. I was going to ask you, and so if you were walking down the street and you saw something going on that didn't look right and it was, you know, something against a woman.
Oh, yeah, you have to address it in a way that makes you feel safe.
Okay.
You know, whether it's, you know, calling the cops,
mm-hmm,
or whether it's you stepping in personally.
Yes.
Because I do believe in safety first.
Yes.
I mean, if a guy's, you know,
yeah,
toting the gun, you might want to tread lightly.
Tread lightly.
But
right,
you must do something.
You got to do something.
You must. It's our duty.
Good. You know what? Chivalry is not dead.
It is not.
It's not dead.
No.
Yeah, let's start spreading that message.
Yeah.
Chivalry is not dead. You know, you just got to find the right man or the right people or the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have the right understanding.
That's so right.
I'm with that for sure. And then next we have, I want to shout out Patricia Smith for posting this video. And it kind of digs into our history as a Black community. Like we were just talking about, we come in all kinds of shades and,
mm-hmm,
hues. And but sometimes we may have colorist thoughts or colorism inside our own community.
Mm, indeed.
And so sometimes someone that seems to be the benefactor of the colorist antics that goes on sometimes to speak out against it and really talk about it and really dig into, you know, the concept,
mm-hmm,
of different shades in the Black community,
mm-hmm,
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's play that video.
Boys who like light-skinned girls. I am not your fetish. I am not your token. You're too scared of black coffee, so you ask for cream in your cup, so you can't see your own reflection, or better yet, your mother's. Dark rum is too strong for little boys with no spines. No, you like white wine. The shapely glass is more fun to hold in front of your friends to prove your class, but I am not white wine. I am moonshine you thought would be kind going down your throat. But you get no chaser, no metaphor. Dark boys don't like dark girls because white man said divide and conquer and then sewed the paper bag behind your eyelids. I am not the cream in your coffee or your pretty wine glass. I am rubbing alcohol in your wounds infected by hate that was not your own design. I will not let you off easy. I will burn and bubble and show you that it's nothing but espresso in your veins. I am not your fetish. I am your wake-up call.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
That is heavy.
I can tell the way you said.
Yeah, that is heavy, and but I understand her sentiment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
and why she may feel that way.
Yes.
And why dark skinned women feel. Sometimes they feel like they're being overlooked, especially with high social value,
yes,
males who, you know, the biggest thing I hear from black
women,
darker,
yeah,
women,
yeah,
is that, you know, when he becomes successful,
mm-hmm,
he going to be with a...
He going to get him a life view. You ain't want to say it. Don't worry, I'll say it.
Because it's not true for every guy,
yes,
but I get it. We get it because we do see it.
Yes.
I mean, it is a fact that,
mm-hmm,
it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And... she addresses it in a very artful way, I must say.
Elegant, too.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke eloquently
about
it. That
was poetry.
Yes, yes. And, you know, one thing I wanted to highlight from what I get from what she's saying is that, you know, it didn't start with the black community. It didn't start with us.
Right.
You know, if we watch TV or even music videos, we see what's highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
And so before it was almost taboo to have a black woman on TV to represent or to be aligned with a black man. You know, once the black man became more successful, it was almost like they didn't even want to show that successful black man with a black woman. Right. And then so it went from, you know, white woman to a pretty much Hispanic woman. Then it went to light skinned black woman.
Yes. And what's interesting about the colonial mindset is that it transcends cultures.
Yeah.
Because when you go to, I was in Thailand a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
The marquee, when you go in the airport, the whiter, I mean, literally banners for skin whitening.
Lightening. Yes, products.
Products,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Which is phenomenal.
It's crazy. Like over in Asia, but especially Thailand, it's all about the whiter, the lighter, the better. And I'm thinking, you guys are already light. What are you, you know, lightening your skin even more? But it's even you read the products and it says, get rid of that nasty melanin. That's what it says, like, on the product.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, what?
Really?
But it is a brainwash that has happened not just in America, but I would say worldwide.
Around the world.
Yeah.
You know, white is right. Mm-hmm. And, you know?
Yeah.
But yet, it's the brown people's culture
that's
and
been,
our music that's appropriated across the board.
Right.
Which,
in, right.
You know, it's not a lot of light skinned rappers besides Drake that are that big. I mean, really, right? How many light skinned rappers are there?
It's the craziest case of love hate that I've ever seen. You know, you ever meet a person that you know love, hate you, you know, love you, wish they could be you, hate you because they can't be.
Whew.
That's.
That's a
what
that's
it comes
a whole.
So, moving on, I want to shout out to Shoe Mess for putting this video together. And as we continue and go through our history, let's see what's happening. Like I said, sometimes we think that the revolution is over because it's not being televised, but that's all it is. It's just not being televised. So let's continue with this and talk about it.
If you've ever wondered why there are no police at this rally, but lots of police at these rallies, it's for the same reason you never see Miley Cyrus and Hannah Montana together, or Superman and Clark Kent, or Batman and Bruce Wayne. Don't think for a second that police weren't in that crowd. They were just in a different uniform.
Wow.
And the revolution continues.
Wow.
But I love it when we all come together, you know, under one nation, under God, indivisible, for justice, for all.
That's right.
I love it. And sometimes we have to step outside ourselves and speak out against what we know is wrong.
It's true.
And I believe that the thing that's so different about this, as they're calling it race war. I call it an uprising. I think what's so different about it is that has affected everyone around the world, and everyone is finally speaking out, saying this is just not right.
Yeah, and I love the sentiment, and you know what I see the young people really really digging their heels into this. Notion of enough's enough.
Enough is enough.
And we feel it, but the young people are standing behind
that's
that.
That's right.
Because enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
You know?
And it's only right because the young people, they're the ones that's going to run the world.
That's right.
They're going to be our dignitaries, you know, our constituents.
That's right.
They're going to be the ones that make the laws.
That's right.
So it's only right that they're the one that starts the change.
That's right.
You know?
And they're approaching it from a systemic you know, through the systemic issues that our country is facing, and they understand that the laws must be rewritten.
Yes.
Versus, you know, just you know, so they get both sides of what needs to happen, and that's what I love.
I love
like,
it.
You know, they're educated. Look at all the sisters coming out of, you know, Harvard law.
Yes.
Come on.
Come on, man.
You can't.
Magic.
You know, it's,
magic.
It's time.
Yeah. And organized, that's what I like to see.
We're organized.
You know, at first it seemed a little chaotic, you know, especially from what we were being shown.
Right.
through the media.
Right.
But when you sat back and looked at this thing, it's like, wow, this is, they're organized.
They're organized, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the key to anything. So finally, as we continue down this road of Black history, I always want to show things that are is going to continue our uplifting, our uprising, and I want to be able to give you information. I would like to be your source of information as to what we can do to continue uplifting our community. And so this last video, I want to shout out to Short Hair Chai for posting this TikTok video. Can you play that for me?
Hey, I'm Black. You follow me, I follow back. And that's facts. You my homie and I got your back. We got talent. Everybody need to see it. So with that being said, I'm going to repeat it. But sing it. Hey, I'm Black. You follow me, I follow back. And that's facts. My...
So, you guys, I hope you guys caught that information. If not, rewind it. Or either follow Short Hair Chai on Instagram. And it was showing you that there is a bank, a Black bank, a Black-owned bank called United. So she had her card. She got her debit card. And she opened up her bank account. You know, it's a way to support us.
That's right.
So I'm excited.
That's good. Great.
A good end to a good story.
Put your dollar.
Yes. So I want to get into this commentary, and then we're going to get this show on the road. Like I said, we have Elijah Rock in the building today, and I named this commentary Black Magic.
Wow.
Yes. What defines Black Magic? Is it evil magic, or is it simply the way Sammy Davis Jr., the way he moved across the stage as if he was walking on air? Is Black Magic what people with ill will towards humanity use to conquer the world, or is it simply how Cab Calloway knew how to light up the room at the Cotton Club? Well, we definitely know that what Black girl magic means, but let's talk about Black man magic, something that my guest today has exemplified in his exciting career. So unexpected. Who knew that Fred Astaire would reappear in the form of a charmingly handsome Black man? Elijah Rock is a full entertainer. He's a decorated vocalist, actor, dancer, and author. Please give a warm 2020 vision welcome to the crooning extraordinaire, Elijah Rock.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
No worries.
Thank
yes,
you.
You're here. Took you long enough.
Someone asked me, like, when did you guys meet? How did you meet? And I said, I can't remember exactly, but I just remember we're just like, I've been following her on social media. Uh-huh. She's been following me. Uh-huh. And do you remember how did you discover me?
I'm so glad you asked that question.
Okay.
I'm in the interview.
Okay.
He conducted the interview, yeah. No, but we were working on the Natalie Cole review.
That's right.
Yes. And we had Mahesh on
the team. That's right.
One of Natalie Cole's pianists.
That's right.
Oh, my God. They're going to kill me. I just spaced his name on bass.
Yes. I know you're talking about
But what a Natalie Cole.
Yes.
Bass player. I cannot think of his name. He's going to kill me. They're going to kill me.
Because his face is right there.
Yeah.
It is right there. Yeah.
You know, but we had all heavy hitters. And we were doing the tribute to Natalie Cole, and I was singing her R&B soul music, and Stelita was singing her jazz tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed a Nat King Cole.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, we need a Nat King Cole to do Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. What
yeah.
a song.
And I believe it was Mahesh that said, I know exactly who to call.
Yeah.
And you came in. You were so professional. We was in rehearsal. We was trying to get things together. The parking was crazy in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
But you came in and did your thing, you know, sang. And, you know, it was everything was everything. It was professional. You came in, did your thing, and you were out of there. But ever since then... we started following each other. You were at Vitello's as well several times. I started getting all your newsletters and things of that nature. So I've been following your career as well as you've been following me. I've been
following
you too. So I knew that we had to get you on here. This is going to be such a great show. People haven't seen a you. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
they don't know what this is, but they'll know by the time we're done.
Yeah.
So that's how we met. You remember now?
I remember well because I remember where it was, and I remember the parking.
Yeah. Because did your car, wasn't your car?
It wasn't my car. It's another car. Yeah.
Somebody's car. I don't know if they got towed, got ticketed. Something happened.
Yeah.
It was a car pull. No, it was a tow truck pulling up, and everybody ran out of the field. Like, hell no.
See what's going on. Those some expensive tickets down there in Santa Monica.
So who was asking you? You said someone was asking you, how'd you meet me, huh?
Yeah, because, you know, my friend who, you know, down, because like I said yesterday, I didn't plan on being in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
And it just happened. And so I was like, well, yeah, I mean, because you mentioned the studio,
yeah.
And I was like, let me see what's going on. So my friend was like, how'd you meet her? And I was like, let me think.
You're such a superstar. You run into every, you have no idea.
I meet a lot of people, but you know, you were just familiar, mm-hmm. And now it all makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told me that.
Yeah. I'm glad I still have that memory.
Absolutely.
You know? So I love to take the audience from the beginning to the middle to the end.
Okay.
So forgive me if I ask, you know, rudimentary questions, but I want everyone to know you. I know there's a lot of people that know you. I know you have a huge following. There's so many accolades that we're going to talk about, we're going to get into, but I really want them to just get to know you, you know, the man behind the voice and the dancing and the actor and the author. I really want them to get to know you. So where did you hail from? Did you start in Los Angeles, or where did you come from?
Well, I'm from Cleveland.
Okay, I thought you fell out the sky.
Cleveland, Ohio. You know, it's funny because there's a lot of entertainers from Cleveland.
Yes, it is.
You know, the list is long.
Yes.
From Vanessa Bell Calloway.
Yes.
You know, Steve Harvey.
Yes.
And so many. So I came up in Cleveland, born and raised in Cleveland.
Okay.
And the cool thing about Cleveland is that Cleveland has such a rich cultural arts community.
Okay.
Caramel House is in Cleveland, which is the first black community theater in the country.
Okay.
Negro Ensemble in New York was the first black theater company.
Okay.
But Caramel House, so a lot of the older black entertainers like Bill Cobbs, character actor, a lot of these people came up through Caramel House in Cleveland.
Okay.
And so I was so fortunate to have Caramel in my backyard.
Okay.
But my earliest training came from me being in the gospel choir in my Mennonite church, my urban Mennonite church in inner city Cleveland, where we had the most multicultural gospel choir you'd ever want to, you know, you know what I mean? And it was so cool because I was singing the hymns, I was singing the spirituals and the gospel music, right?
Okay.
And then I went to a private Jewish boy school where I was introduced to classical music.
Okay, so wait, you were in a gospel choir, but you did sing hymns and you did sing classical. So when did your parents decide, okay, just send them to this private, what was it, a private?
A boy school. A Jewish boy
Jewish,
school.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
When did they say, hey, let's send them there?
Well, it's, you know, I went there, I started going there in Cleveland, at kindergarten.
Okay.
And my mom just, it was just one of the, you know, it's one of the best schools. So she wanted her son to have the best education that he, that
we
I could
do.
Have.
Yeah.
Yes. And so they saw that I had a musical gift.
Okay.
And so it was this interesting parallel support system of the teachers in school seeing I had a gift, the people in church thing I had a gift because you know they had me soloing
right.
your first little solo in front of your church parishioners is experience right. A lot of black singers and singers in general we grew up singing in a church so when they there was a one of our music ministers his name was Mr. Hughes and Mr. Hughes sang classical music he was a classical singer So Mr. Hughes suggested to my mother that, you know, when I was about 10, 11, as a boy soprano, that I should audition for the Cleveland Opera Children's Chorus and the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus.
Okay.
And as a boy soprano, I got in.
Yes.
And so that was coupled with me being in, musicals at school.
Yes.
So I was Charlotte in Charlotte's Web. That was mm-hmm. my first gig. Right. As a boy soprano,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I must be like fifth grade.
Oh my God!
Right?
It goes to show where your voice was first soprano.
Yeah, I was a boy soprano. Most baritones were sopranos
right.
until the voice
yes.
changes, and so that was huge for me because when I was with the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus and the Cleveland Opera Children's Chorus, where mm-hmm. I got to sing in La Boheme,
mm-hmm.
Turandot.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen,
mm-hmm.
you are in a very professional situation,
okay.
right?
Okay.
I mean, the training is rigorous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that was the beginning and the foundation of everything that came after.
When did you understand that you actually not just had a knack for this type of music, but that you actually loved and enjoyed it? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had gospel roots.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that is, and
mm-hmm.
that usually leads us to R&B,
mm-hmm.
you know, soul, you know, or what they call soul. When did you say, like, this is where it is for me, this is what resonates with me?
Well, this music is, see, it's interesting with classical music because the classical voice is a voice that God gives you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And even though I would hear what some of the contemporary gospel
yeah.
or soul artists were doing
yeah.
vocally,
mm-hmm.
Kinds of vocal calisthenics weren't my gift.
Okay.
And so because I had these classical, wonderful influences
mm-hmm.
around me
mm-hmm.
and my mother was born with a natural classical voice.
Wow.
So
okay.
in the gospel choir, when you heard that, oh, it's my mom,
that was
right?
your mom. Yeah.
So we knew it was in me.
Yeah.
I recognized that it was in me.
Yeah.
And I had people around me that helped to cultivate
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I made that connection with classical voice and the Negro spiritual,
mm-hmm,
when
mm-hmm.
I became aware of Paul Robeson
yeah,
and
yeah.
William Warfield,
mm-hmm.
then my understanding of what we bring to the hymns
yes.
and the spirituals
yes.
and classical voice is so unique and so rich.
Yes.
That I began to embrace that.
Yes, yes. So as you're going through school, did you finish in this private Jewish all-boys school? Did you go all the way through high school in this
yeah,
school?
Yeah, I went from K through 12,
okay.
pretty much.
Okay,
yeah.
So it wasn't like you had homeboys there. Oh, man, you sing like that. You didn't go through that.
Well, it's interesting because we had kids that would start to integrate
mm-hmm.
into our school
mm-hmm.
via athletics
yes.
by the seventh and eighth grade,
okay.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them didn't come from, you know,
yeah.
they came from lesser means.
Yeah.
And that was cool for me because mm-hmm. even though I went to the church that I went to, my mom's from the South.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my mom comes from a big family,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So just on my grandmother's side, she's the eldest of 12.
Yes.
And she got
oh,
eldest
wow.
of 12 on her dad's side,
wow.
right?
Wow.
Okay. So out of that 12, 9 migrated to Cleveland
oh.
from Florida, where my mom, Florida, Georgia.
Originally from.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had this nucleus of a family in Cleveland that, you know, they were like, listen, you know, we know you go on to university school during the week, but you with us now.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, people talk about code switching.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
right.
I was code switching since I was
five.
Right?
Right, right.
I mean, unconsciously
yes.
code switching.
Yes.
Right. And so that experience was so crucial for me because it just helped me to understand that, you know, this music is so important. And I saw the connection,
mm-hmm.
you know, the connection between mm-hmm. our ancestry
mm.
and these songs
yes.
that got us through 400 years
That's right.
of slavery.
That's right.
And though we have artists who communicate the pain and the suffering of our experience in the Black church.
Mm-hmm.
You also had singers like Paul Robeson and Marian Anderson
mm-hmm.
who were taking our gifts, and we were in communities that didn't look like us.
That's right.
To deliver the message.
So. Yeah, it has to be told. Yes. And that's why we're here today. So we, as we continue to celebrate you, one of the things that we do during when we bring a music guest on, you fit into, actually you're going to fit into more than one category today, but one of the categories that you fit into is music is everything. So we like to show a collage and of music artists that we love and just a homage to them. And we put that together and we want you to take a look at it.
Wow, that's cool.
Play that for me.
But no other man's gonna do. So I'm saving all my love for you. Drumming my pain with this finger. Singing my life with the words. Killing it softly with this song.
All eyes on me,
around the world I've searched for you. I've traveled on when hope was gone to keep a rendezvous. I know somewhere, sometime, somehow, you'd look at me. I would see that smile you're smiling now. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me. Not like it's hurt me before. And if she'll say, my baby, I'm yours, I'll throw away my stripe card. Oh, and my best friend. All I really need is my girl. Lord, without you, baby, without you, don't get around much anymore.
For my debut album, Gershwin for My Soul, which was my homage to George and Ira Gershwin, my first solo record.
You laugh tonight and cry tomorrow when you behold your shadow sleep. Jiggle-o and jiggle-et and wake up to find their eyes are wet with tears that tell of broken dreams.
That was fantastic. I was a kid in Carmen and La Boheme and Torrendal. And then it all went downhill when my voice changed.
The matter's all your heart. Well, it's with me now. The matter's all your heart.
I said Caldonia! Caldonia! What makes your big head so hard? I love my baby. Yep.
And so did I. That love would bring, I will be remembering the shadow of your smile.
We want to propose a toast to you.
Oh.
We want to celebrate your career today.
Oh,
here
thank
on
you.
2020 Vision. And, you know, what we do, we've been, each month we introduce a new whiskey. And my husband tells us all about it because he's the whiskey drinker in the house.
Yeah, we were talking.
And I just come along for the ride.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about what we have this time around. Can we see that good? Is that good? Is that in there?
Yeah, it is.
I hope I don't drop it because I'm clumsy.
So this month we're going to do a Suntory whiskey. It's a Japanese, and this one's a blended Japanese whiskey. So it's more than just one type of whiskey. It's not just a rye or just one specific type. It's blended. So it's got a couple different versions that they kind of mix together.
Okay.
And then just for, you know, for everybody's educational purposes, Japanese mm-hmm. whiskeys are closer to like scotches.
Mm-hmm.
So they're
mm-hmm.
so they're typically a little bit smoother than some of the other whiskeys and not as sweet as like, say, bourbons or so, you know, so on and so forth. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's pour this up.
Japanese whiskey.
Get this going so we can celebrate Elijah's career. We love it. We're excited. We love talent here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the show is based on music, acting, comedy, and spirituality.
Mm.
So you can see how you fit in all those categories.
Thank you.
Is that mine? Woo. you never
put me. He gave her a gentleman's pour.
I know. That can't be mine. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming on 2020 Vision. And we
thank
want to propose
you.
A toast to your career. And congratulations on everything that you have accomplished and that you're still going to do. And thank you for paving the way for us.
Thank
you.
You
know, thank you.
Salud.
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 Oh,
this
bad.
Is nice.
Peppery a little bit in my nose, but it's not bad. I'm trying them all out.
Mm-hmm.
So far, Green Spot is my favorite. And what's the other one I like? Belvini 14. This one is light. It's not bad. It kind of has a what's the the little that you drink up? Sakura, what's the name of the, never mind. It's going to take too long for us to figure it out.
Very nice.
Yeah, very light. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get into the Great American Songbook. I know you're blazing the trail and you've been touring.
Yes.
And doing the I would say the repertoire
mm-hmm.
of the Great American Songbook. Can you explain to us what it actually is for those who doesn't know, and tell us why and how you chose to go into that? I would say go down that road of music. What made you?
That's
go
a
into
great
that?
Question.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Great American Songbook is music from the 1920s through the 1940s, 50s.
Okay.
And that was the standard popular music of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So some people refer to them as the standards.
Okay, yes.
But that's also the Great American Songbook.
Okay. All right, I knew that one. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you are on the classical track,
okay.
So when I continue to develop as a singer,
mm-hmm.
and you're learning classical repertoire. Mm-hmm. You're also learning the early American composer repertoire, like Aaron Copland,
mm-hmm.
people like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that it extends to Gershwin,
mm-hmm.
George and Ira Gershwin,
mm-hmm.
Cole Porter,
mm-hmm.
Rodgers and Hart,
mm-hmm.
Irving Berlin, the early American musical music, the early films in the 20s and the 40s, where this music was featured. And so it is an classical music.
Okay.
It is America's classical music, because America's classical music is the amalgamation of European musical themes and jazz and blues themes, which we as a race cultivated, right? So you got the Negro spiritual, which feeds into blues and jazz, which incorporates with the early American classical composers.
Yes.
Now you get the Great American Songbook in America's true first musical body of work, right?
Yes.
And that's what makes us so unique,
yeah.
is that when you talk about American music, it is a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, Wynton Marsalis talks about that all the time, you know, but it's in those European artists like Gershwin, who were Jews, for example, what makes Porgy and Bess, and Bess, is that he actually hung out with the Gullah people in the Carolinas.
Okay.
To understand how the Gullah people talk, how they communicate.
Yeah.
Their music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to get it right.
Okay.
And for all intents and purposes, one can argue he did in the way he brought it together.
Okay.
And so, and then actually showcased that music in a classical context so that, again, it could reverberate to a community that may not go to Harlem. You know what I mean? I mean, but the hip folk, white or black, they were going to the Cotton Club. They were going to the Savoy. They were going to these places and seeing where our music was coming from. And so when people talk about Sinatra and they talk about Elvis and some of the you know, white artists who have become famous, whether, you know, many of them who took advantages, maybe not all, but those that did acknowledge where they got the soul.
Okay.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
It's the ones, you know, it's when the appropriation happens and
there's no acknowledgement.
What I have a problem with. So that's how I got into that music. And then I got turned on to Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes.
And then, you know, so when I started to get into the crates of Sammy Davis, Johnny Hartman, Billy Eckstein, you know, Joe Williams, and so many that people don't even talk about, Freddie Cole, Nat King Cole, I understood that Ella, Sarah Vaughan, Nancy Wilson, all these beautiful sisters, we were the music.
Yes.
I mean, it came from us.
Yes, yes.
And so for me, it was like, to have an opportunity to come from a classical background, because a lot of the singers who sang that movie, that music in the early days, were classically trained.
Right.
In bel canto.
Right.
That is a lost art.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason now bel canto has been this thing that's reserved for classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But bel canto singers were singing classical pop and jazz.
Wow.
Because they learned technique.
Yes. Yes. You know, I was, upon doing research and just kind of watching you perform, I like, obviously I like watching, but I like the fact that it feels like you're telling the story when you're singing, when you're performing. And I've watched you in front of several different audiences, and everyone's very attentive, because it's like, it's almost a curiosity, but they're being thrilled at the same time. Almost a curiosity, but anyway, they're being, you know, thrilled at the same time. And so I like, it looks like you're giving them an education.
That's powerful.
It looks like you're telling the story. Like, this is really how the story should have been told. That's what it looks like to me when I'm watching.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny you mentioned, interesting you mentioned storytelling.
Okay.
Storytelling is so key. And, you know, I have a few students, and I really try to reiterate this aspect.
Yeah.
Storytelling is so crucial. And there's this the cool thing about this music is these songs were cultivated in such a masterful way.
Right.
And I always say to people, like, regardless of what kind of music you write, if you want to be a well-rounded songwriter, it bodes well you have an understanding of the structure of what made these songs timeless.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And there was a way that they talked about love and romance and the loss of love and the hope of love and courtship, requited love, that was so nuanced and so in the way they created metaphor and ignited your imagination. They didn't have to tell you everything like some of the music today. It's like, did we really have to hear
that? Did you have to say
like,
that?
All of it? Like, could a little bit be left to the imagination?
Yes.
And it takes more skill to do that.
And I feel like we're always being told to water it down now, you know, as we write. It's too, you know, we use too many metaphors. You know, but then again, Lil Wayne comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes like the metaphor king, you know, and it's like, okay, well,
metaphors are great. Right, it's like, just like, do we need to be so graphic?
And right. And I understand that. And so what I was saying that before, like, you know, even the way Prince writes,
right.
You know, you always have to like, you have to damn near study his music.
Even Michael.
Yes. You know, and I miss that. Yeah. And I still write like that. Yeah. Like I still write with, you know, to make you think, you know, but constantly when you're in by big industry, when you're in the studio, like you got to water it down a little, you know, you got to be more clever and just make the same point, but keep it basic. But remember, I feel like popular music, pop music is kind of based on a sixth grade education. Like if, you know, when you speak to the masses, you speak to them on a sixth grade level.
Yeah.
And that way you get everybody, you encompass everybody. Yeah. So I think it comes down to communication and what wavelength that or what frequency we're on at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the greatest songs are that we love are really like nursery rhymes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we love. Yeah. You know, we don't know the ABCs. We know the melody. We know ABCs, you know, how to say it just straight.
It's simple, simple song.
Yeah.
And so I write songs in this vein.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, I'm so happy to have the opportunity to keep this music relevant because I do feel like I'm on an island by myself. And
but that's not a bad thing. People tend to win when they're, you know, when they can set themselves apart, something different.
Yeah, well, it has been working out for me.
Yeah,
in that regard,
I say it has.
Yeah, it has, and it's, you know, Freddie Cole just died and, you know, he was the last great Sebastian of this, you know, an African-American male doing this music, Freddie, Nat King Cole's brother.
Okay.
And, it's so interesting. He passed a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah.
And when he passed, I really, cause I got to meet him again, in New York, over the holiday.
Okay. When was the first time?
About 15 years ago on a cruise ship in the Mediterranean.
You guys were singing?
I was the lead singer production show, and he was on a jazz cruise as the headliner.
Yeah.
And so I spent like 2 weeks hanging out with him in the band.
Yeah.
And he dropped some nuggets on me that I'll never forget. And when he passed away, I had this overwhelming sense of a baton being passed.
I was going to say.
And that was pretty profound.
Yes. You felt the energy, huh?
Oh, it was deep.
It's beautiful. People don't understand that energy, first of all, will not be killed nor destroyed.
Mm-mm.
And it is here for the taking. It is for us, for our utilization.
Yeah.
More power into the universe is everything. We can utilize that, you know, at any given moment, just tap into it. So the fact that you received that and accepted that, that's great.
And he could tell a story.
Yeah.
Oh, to have him say good things about you and to say, you know, you're the next, you know, you're the one that, you know, you carry this on and to watch how he's able to deliver a story.
Mm-hmm.
His manager produced the vocals on my new record.
Wow.
Susie Reynolds.
Oh, that's a blessing.
Right.
Yeah.
So she was like, you know, when we were in the studio, she was just like really asking me to delve deeper into my authenticity and storytelling. And I have to say there were even moments where I, you know, where I felt like I need to go, how much deeper can I go? But that's what a great acting coach will do.
We'll do the same thing. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll challenge you to go deeper into your own authenticity.
Yeah. We're going to get into that too, because I was watching that too. Anyway, we have a lot of stuff to cover, but I was watching you on your reel. I was like, oh my God. I mean, for real, a real entertainer. So far, good at everything I've seen. You're great at everything that you do. And we want to show more of it. We know you have a thing for Gershwin.
Oh, we do. Thailand, huh? You going to Thailand right now? I'm going to Thailand.
So we do have a video, Gershwin for My Soul. Mm. Yes, that's the same thing, the same song we actually used for the promo.
Oh, wow.
So I think they deserve to hear and actually get a visual of it as well.
The essence of courtship coming at you.
Let's play that Gershwin for My Soul.
Listen to the drumbeat in my heart, can't deny it. Had me searching high and low for melodies and lines of love. I found Gershwin for my soul, and it's music for your soul. Now I know what Ira meant when he said, romancing, that love is here to stay, my dear, if we just keep on dancing. All my hopes and dreams unfold, sweet lyrics make my spirit whole. I need Gershwin for my soul, and it's music for your soul. Gershwin for my soul. Music for your soul. That name rhythm, wonderful, long ago. My soul.
Thank you.
Yes, that's beautiful. Such beautiful scenery.
Well, it was so amazing. We shot that in 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And I had a Russian producer and a Russian cinematographer who didn't speak English.
Wow. And how did
he made it happen? I was like, if you can get me these shots.
Uh-huh.
I wrote the script, directed it.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you were the director.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he made it happen.
It turned out wonderful.
I'm so happy.
Where did you shoot that? That was beautiful.
Phuket, Thailand.
Phuket, Thailand.
Yes.
The world renowned Elijah Rock.
Yeah, wow.
And you went there and got them to do exactly what you needed to do.
I did. I didn't go there at the music video.
Do tell.
Well, I was in Australia, and me and my cousin,
yeah,
and we decided we didn't want to come back home.
That's so nice. I love that.
So we looked at a map,
uh-huh,
and it said, you can just get from here to Bangkok for not a lot of money.
Okay.
So we did that,
uh-huh,
got to Bangkok, and was like, this is cool, but it's a little crazy over here. And so we were like, where can we go now to just hang out and chill? And so... We hooked up with the Airbnb,
okay,
in Phuket by Nai Harin Beach,
uh-huh,
which is one of the premier beaches. We were like, how do we luck on this one?
Right.
We blessed up. And I'm there. And then I'm like, and I had the album, the Gershwin album was done and packaged.
Mm-hmm.
I brought like 50
with
records
you
with me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, hey, I'm just, you know, meeting a few people, passing them out.
Yeah.
I met this lady and she goes, you know, I know some cinematographers on the island that you might want to talk to.
Right.
And I said, yeah, how about I shoot my music video?
Yes.
She was like, I think that's a great idea.
Wow.
And I met with this French cinematographer and these Russian guys, and I went with the Russian guys. They could meet the budget. I said, I want a Thai boat so that
okay,
we can get that.
Okay.
I said, I want an elephant. They're like, we can get that.
Wow.
I said, can you give me a lemur? we actually took the lemur out because we didn't want to get in trouble with the animal activists.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, we had a lemur.
Oh my
in
god.
In the video. And that villa was a blessing.
Yeah.
That was a gift.
And that wasn't the Airbnb. That was
no.
That was a villa.
They just said,
"Hey, use this."
No, these guys met me and they were like, "Yeah, we heard you on the radio because I was, you know, I was on the radio in town."
Yeah.
And this guy goes, "Yeah, I'm a contractor for this villa up on the mountain called the View."
God.
And he goes, "Will you give me some love in the video?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll give you 2 nights."
Oh my God!
See. That's the story of my life.
This is, you know, this is the classic, and your talent will make a way for you. This is what that is.
It is. I mean, this is really going to,
okay,
you're going to love this story.
I'm listening. I can't
so
wait.
I'm in Thailand.
Uh-huh.
And they have these little stakeouts where they can stake you out.
Okay.
And, you know, the cops will pull you over. And if you don't have a helmet or you don't have, you know, proper ID, they may have you pay a fine.
Okay.
So, we were coming around the corner. We were going to the beach one day,
uh-huh,
and I came around the corner and I saw a little stakeout. So I turned around,
uh-huh,
right quick. Well, they saw me see them.
Okay.
And so I was on a moped and I kicked it like 60 miles per hour. I turned it up as far as I cranked that thing. Right. These two guys approached me. My cousin's behind me. He goes, they're coming, right? He's on his little bike. And all of a sudden, I look back. He's disappeared behind a shack. I don't know where he went.
Okay.
These two guys roll up on me with on a motorcycle.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
A motorcycle, two of them on a motorcycle. Okay. And they're moving like 100 miles an hour.
Okay.
They pull me over.
Oh, Lord.
They go through all my bags, blah, blah, blah. They thought I had, you know, maybe something. I didn't have anything. I was clean.
Right, right.
So they said they were baffled because they thought maybe they were going to find something. Mm-hmm. So they said, follow me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they asked me, where were you going? I said, I'm going to the beach. I said, you know, I'm American and I'm confused.
Yeah,
they said, well, the beach was the way you were going. So they said, follow me. So I went, followed them back to the stakeout. And there was a colonel there.
Okay.
And the colonel was no frills.
Yeah.
This guy was literally like, you know, no smiles.
Right, right. He's ready.
So I said to the cops and the colonel, I said, you know, hey guys, I was just on the radio a few days ago. I'm a singer. This guy walks up to me. He gets straight in my face and he goes, sing.
All right. Well
so
that's what I do.
Yeah, I said, fly me to the moon.
Yes.
Let me play amongst the stars. And I did a little move.
Bam.
He was like, you can go.
Yes.
He said, you can go.
Yes.
And they were all smiling and laughing. And he let me go. And I went to the beach and I said, man, that you talk about talent getting you out of a pickle.
I know, that's right. As it should. Where's your cousin?
So while he saw me follow him back to the stakeout, he's behind his shack drinking a Singer beer, like cracking up. Literally cracking up. And so then he peeled off and went to the beach the back way, and we met up at the beach. And I said, what happened? He said, I saw a little cut in the road, and I just dove behind the shack. He said, this guy in a little hut came out to him and said, the cop's right. He goes, yeah. He gave him a beer.
What are they looking for, you know?
True story. We That's die wonderful. Laughing every time we talk about it.
That's wonderful. How long did that trip last?
2 months.
Wow.
35 baht to a dollar. We were living really good.
I know you were. So you went out there for a vacation or to promote your album?
Yeah, because when I was in Australia, I met with William Morris, met some people about some shows, and so I went to Thailand and so then I shot the video there.
Yes.
And then when I came back, I had all the assets. Then I put out the record.
Wonderful. And so you performed in Australia then? The performance was actually in Australia.
I actually performed two shows in Phuket. Yeah, had nothing lined up, but Australia, I wanted to meet with some possible representation.
Okay.
But when I got to Phuket, people found out so quickly that there's a singer there's a crooner in town. And you know, Phuket's like a mini Russia, right? And so Russian people, they love elegant.
Okay.
Any kind of elegance, music, lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I hooked up with a Russian promoter who was doing a big party. I mean, this thing was at one of the exclusive resorts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. Story of my life.
What a life. You never, you know, and I never even got to, how'd you get to L.A.? We haven't even got there yet. We're all in Phuket.
Yeah, we're all in Phuket, yeah. Well, I got to L.A.
Okay.
From New York.
Oh,
I lived in New York 10 years.
So when you left Cleveland, you went?
When I left Cleveland, I came here for two years, and I toured with the Jubilee Singers.
Okay.
And I was singing Negro spiritual music all over the world.
Yes.
And then I went back to Cleveland for 2 years to work in theater, the Caramel House and a bunch of theaters. Then I felt like I was strong enough to compete in New York.
Okay.
So I went to New York and
Broadway.
Mostly a lot of regional theater at that time.
Okay.
I didn't even have my equity card.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of, you know, you come up doing the bus and truck tours and all that stuff. And people say, you come from the beginning. I mean, I came from going to the big auditions in New York and I started working in the regional market.
Yes.
And then I developed the show with a couple of guys and a TV pilot. And we came to L.A. in 2006. And then I decided to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got bit by the bug, huh?
I got bit by the bug. And I was like, let me try this TV thing.
Yes. As sunshine and beaches, women and film and television.
Man. And you know, you know, there's one moment I had in L.A. Because if you've been in L.A., I mean, first of all, they say if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere.
Anywhere.
I think there's some truth to that. But there also is some truth that if you can make it in L.A.,
you can make it anywhere.
I think so.
Yes.
And I remember I had one moment in L.A. A few years into L.A. And the second time, it was about 2008. And I had a moment where I was really considering going back to New York.
Yeah.
And because I had left L.A. Mm-hmm. after 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like 90, I think it was 95 to 97 okay. performance, I was like, nah, I'm not going out like that.
You were going for a theater? What were you going back for?
I was thinking that theater might be what I should focus on.
Okay.
But then I thought to myself, no, you were going to stay here and you were going to make it.
You're going to make it.
That's right.
Y'all hear that? Stay focused.
You're going to make it.
Stay focused. And stay focused. Yes, that's
right.
All I'm saying.
That's
okay,
right.
So y'all that don't understand why I'm still here.
Because there are opportunities
There
are opportunities here.
And all you have to do is be willing to do it.
That's right. Just do the work and go through those trying times that may make you question why you do what you do. And I thought, yeah, I could go to New York, but I also thought some long winters.
Okay. Ooh, it's a concrete jungle for real.
Yeah, and I love New York.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I spent almost 10 years in New York.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my best friends are in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, but,
almost 10 years, you say?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, almost 10 years in New York City. I mean, it's where I cut my teeth. It's where I put my first jazz band together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was doing shows. I had a 7-piece jazz ensemble. Mm-hmm. So in those early days, I was hanging out with, guys who were in noise funk, on Broadway, tap dancers.
Yeah.
So I was, really stepping up my tap game, because I learned to start tap dancing when I was about 12.
Okay.
From an old cat in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. So you learned from someone, not you didn't go to school for it?
No, I learned from a hoofer, Ed Bubba Taps Ferguson.
In Cleveland?
In Cleveland.
He tapped hands on the corner or what?
He ran a senior, he lived in a senior home and he taught at the music school settlement. He taught kids.
Okay.
And then he saw me because I was in the orchestra playing cello and my stuff. And so he saw me walking down the hall one day. He said, hey, my young man, you look like you might be able to tap.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, tap? Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah, like Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
And I was already singing.
Yeah.
So I was like, hold on. So if I can sing and then I can learn how to tap.
Yeah.
I might be able to do a little something extra.
Yeah, you're out of here. Right, right.
Yeah, so that's when that came about.
I swear, Elijah, don't tell me you got one more talent. I heard you say cello, too. You were playing a cello.
I was playing cello, yeah.
I don't even have that written down, so.
It's not on the resume.
Like, don't even tell me anything else. So, okay, so you're in L.A., and now I know that you're in Vegas.
I'm in Vegas now.
You have a show
in
Vegas.
Yeah.
And how did that come about?
You know, it's crazy. Vegas, the show, I was one of the lead singers in that show for going on almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just signed another contract before COVID.
Oh, wonderful. That's good.
Yeah. So I
right
was,
before.
Yeah. So it was a combination of doing that show and my personal dates.
Okay.
So that was a wonderful experience because I moved from L.A. to Vegas, and within a month, I was in the show.
Okay.
So that was really incredible because I used to have this there was a seed planted about 10 years ago when I saw Clint Holmes perform.
Mm-hmm.
I actually came to Vegas, went to Vegas to see Clint Holmes and see Wayne Newton.
Okay.
Because they were like, the single act headliners at the time that I knew about. And I just remember thinking, wow, it would be cool to perform on the Strip someday.
Yes.
And so when the opportunity came, I was like, it was perfect timing because I was finishing up the new record that's going to be coming out. And I thought, wow, while I have this downtime, why don't I just go ahead and take advantage of this wonderful opportunity? And it's been incredible. I have to tell you, I did not realize that so many people.
Yeah.
Go to Vegas.
Yeah. What would you mean? What do you mean?
You know, okay, so so people from the Midwest.
Right.
Okay, like people from LA, I can see. Okay.
Yeah, like right. Yeah, yeah.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump, right?
Yeah.
But like, I didn't realize how many of my friends go to Vegas from the Midwest and the East Coast on a regular basis.
Yeah. Like, they won't come to LA, but they'll go to Vegas.
No, they'll go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Well, and I get the accommodations are easier in Vegas. Yeah. It's a
touristy town.
It's a touristy town. There's
You're
things to
show.
Do.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot going on, and they come for work. So a lot of times, the company's paying for the Vegas trip.
Oh, okay. Now, I know church, like they'll do the church functions or the whatever, but they're actually coming for work.
For work,
well?
Yeah, because the conventions are huge,
okay.
Right?
Yeah,
that's pretty much the cornerstone of Vegas is, you know, it supports the economy is the conventions.
Okay.
And all that stuff.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So being in a show in Vegas and having friends and family hit me up daily for comps, which I'm completely fine
with and
happy that I can offer comps,
uh-huh.
I realize how many people frequent Vegas. And just seeing all the people there all the time, you go, wow, this is, you know, I when you live there, you really, it really hits home. Like a lot of people from around the world love Las Vegas.
Love Vegas.
It's incredible.
So the show, Vegas, the show.
Yeah, Vegas, the show.
So did they find you? Did they come after you? How did?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They there was an opening in this position, and they found out about me. And Michael went on to Michael and I share the role. And
now who is Michael?
Michael plays the same role I play.
Okay.
I'm just trying to remember Michael's last name.
Yeah.
Michael Washington.
Okay.
Great performer.
Okay.
And he. Hit me. Well, my friend, actually, Frank Lawson. Frank, you know I'm going to tell this story. Frank, he hit up Frank first. So Frank is from here, and Frank and I were in Porgy and Bess together.
Okay, yes.
So Frank, they didn't know about me, but they knew Frank. And so Frank couldn't do the gig
because
he had to go out of the country for a show. And so he said, "Y'all, you guys know who Elijah Rock is?" And Michael's like, "No, man." He said, "Man, check out his IG." So he went to my IG, Instagram, and he said, "Hey, man, you got to give me his number right now." So Frank said, "Hey, man, this guy's going to call you about this show, Vegas show."
Yeah.
It's the only show in Vegas that really speaks to the nostalgia of Vegas. It's
Vegas.
The only singing production show on the Strip that's about classic Las Vegas.
Okay.
So it just fit right in my skill set, obviously.
Yeah.
And so they called me, and the rest is history.
Yeah, yeah, the rest is history for sure.
Yeah.
And we're, like, this time is getting out of here because I have a lot of things that we were supposed to talk to you about. I do want to just shout out some of your accolades. I mean, your awards, your honors, your fundraisers, your distinguished galas. I just want to give it a rundown really quickly. And then I want to get into your book. Okay. So you won the NAACP Theater Award.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you 2019 Carl's Barrett Library and Arts Foundation Gala, 2018 Cork and Soul Festival benefiting, 2018 fundraiser for 2018 North Coast Repertoire Theater Annual Benefit Gala, 2017 Cleveland Playhouse Annual Benefit Gala, 2016 Ovation Theater Award nomination, 2016, now it's IRNE, that's the acronym for the Independent Reviewers of New England Theater Award, 2015 National Anthem, and then the 2014 NAACP Theater Award winner. Congratulations, you.
Thank you.
Congratulations, you.
Done a few things.
Yeah, just a few things. Look at the modesty. So did we have any callers or chatters that needed to say something right now? I'm trying to get it all in, trying to acknowledge everyone. We have more show for you guys. Thomas Crawford, this is Horace to Big Bro, friend and brother. Is that what it is? Is that what I'm reading? And then what else? Okay. And AV saying, what's up? People sending love.
What's up?
people sending love. We have people on Instagram chimed in. Let me see if there's any comments. Everyone is just saying hello and just showing love. Everyone has a lot of love. People are pretty shy about calling in, but they love chatting it up. So yeah. I have to like try to read. What about YouTube? Anyone chiming in on YouTube? By the way, we're on Facebook.
We are on Facebook.
At Amira the Songstress. We're on YouTube at Amira the Songstress. We also are on Periscope at 2020 Vision. And you also can hear us on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music for the iPod. And we're also on Drip the Mic Network during Blog Talk Radio.
Wow.
The call-in number is 646-378-0355. And then you press 1 if you have a question or you just want to say congratulations to Elijah Rock and just want to send some love. Definitely, we would love to hear your voice. And we thank you guys for chiming in that has. Okay, I want to get into this book. I really
the book.
Do. Oh, my God. This is going to be such an interesting conversation. You know, we have, I told you that this show is based on several different things, and one of it is spiritual.
Yeah.
And we have, this segment is called Spiritual Release.
Spiritual Release. I like that.
Spiritual Release.
I like that.
Can we play that? Can we play that drop?
Image is everything. It's where creation starts.
Welcome to the doorway of your vortex.
What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? How big would you play?
The two most powerful words in the English language are I am. Because what comes after I am will shape your life.
He who tills his land shall have plenty of bread.
You want first place, come play with me. You want second place, go somewhere else.
That's right.
Shall have plenty of bread. So I want to introduce your book, The Fine Art of Romance.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
I know that you are a crooner, more than a vocalist. You are a crooner. You love romance. I can tell by the songs you, the words that you sing in your music and the songs that you like to sing and the things that you sing about. And I know you're debonair and all of that. I can just look at you and tell. So it doesn't surprise me that you wrote the book. But what's very fascinating to me is that you took the spiritual approach as well as a holistic approach, mind, body, soul, spirit. And you talked about the way we connect as man and woman. And that's very near and dear to my heart. So I wanted to, the first question I wanted to ask you, it was, what was the inspiration for this book? What was the inspired thought that you had for this book?
Well, I was inspired by experiential evolution of learning through pain and spiritual insight.
Okay.
So, you know, painful experiences and a dedication to my practice of prayer and meditation.
And so
I was having these conversations with my friends about courtship.
Okay.
And also I was going through experiences where I was being challenged to be more authentic.
Okay. Okay.
And so one of the things that I talk about in the book is the fact that becoming more authentic and learning how to honor and revere a woman is something that is cultivated. It's not a, sometimes women may think that it's just a given, that we men just should know certain things. And there are certain things that, you know, arguably we should know. But it all depends on our experience and our childhood domestications, our upbringing, and that determines how much we know. And then it is up to us to take an intrinsic evaluation on what we don't know. And then take steps to figure it out. And when we become more authentic with our relationships, particularly with women, our life has much more balance and harmony.
Mm. Say that again, just one more time.
When we become more authentic with our relationships with women,
yes,
our life has more balance and harmony.
Come on.
Because if you're not, it's just, there's a lot of drama.
I love this talk. I love this. It sounds like you peeked into my head. It sounds like you were in my dream or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is so true. So it leads me to ask you, how did you do your research for this?
You know, that's a great question.
Yeah.
People say, well, how did you know? Well, I am the research.
Okay.
You know, in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Because I saw my life transform.
Okay.
And also, I did my research because I sing love songs for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I actually set up in the introduction, I say that my life experience and my dedication to the art of singing love songs and telling those stories requires me to take an intrinsic investigation into my relationship with not only myself, but how that connects with my relationship with women, the good and the bad.
Okay.
And because you can't tell these stories if it's not connected to a true place.
Yes, it doesn't resonate with you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think artists are some of the, you know, we have so much to offer in our vulnerability and our willingness to be transparent about the good and the bad.
Yes.
I mean, that's what makes us artists.
Yes.
And I know there's a lot of people who, you know, call themselves life coaches, but I think artists, particularly in my lane,
yes, for sure,
we have a lot to offer the conversation.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not saying, hey, you know, I'm not a therapist, and I say that
but the experiences are authentic, and we interpret that those emotions, those feelings, those experiences, most of the time art imitates life.
Art imitates life, and life imitates art.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so,
I just poured my heart out, and I hired an editor. I hired an editor to keep me honorable and to challenge my ideas. She wasn't, you know, it wasn't about her coming in saying, I'm going to, take away your voice or diminish, you know, her whole thing was, okay, that's interesting. And certain things she didn't understand.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
So I had to really dig deep into each word. And here's the thing, because I'm a man speaking to men in this book, I have had, and it's not quote unquote really out there. Like we haven't really publicized it.
Okay.
But
you know, I was going to ask where they can get it.
Oh, they can get it. It's on Amazon.
Okay.
But we just kind of like a soft, the people who have been reading it have been coming back saying, women have been saying, wow, I understand how this is a book for men written by a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I, your tone, because like, you know, we're sharing a conversation about this, the way he and I are going to talk about it may be different than I would have to frame it for you to be offended by the way I might be so direct with him.
Right. I understand.
Cause we just like, God,
y'all
you
just
know.
Gonna say it.
We just say it.
Yeah.
we're not frame it in a way that doesn't, you know, offend our women.
Yeah.
So I'm writing the contra book for women now. I'm like halfway through, and that's Matters of the Heart, a Bachelorette's Handbook.
Oh.
And even though there's a lot of cross-pollination and nuance to my voice, I have to speak differently.
Yeah.
And that's been interesting. Because
you want to just say it.
Because that's how we talk.
I understand.
But I can't just say it like that. I have to massage it in a way that you'll receive it.
Yes.
Which is affirming.
Yes.
And being a little, you know, saying the same thing, but being it. But sometimes, because I'm a man, in this book, I have to say it in a way that's like, I know you don't necessarily want to hear it like this, but this is our mindset.
And I'm just saying, if you can stay authentic, I think a lot of us women, we appreciate the authenticity of a man when you're able to just, you know, I grew up with a lot of brothers, so I'm accustomed to hearing that other side.
Yeah.
a lot of times, and I know that the consensus is, well, women don't want to hear the truth, or they don't want to hear it how it really is. But for me personally, I really want to know. Well, tell me, because that way we can make a decision. We can make an educated decision.
Right.
You know,
and
don't
get it straight.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't pretend.
Yeah.
I mean, because you never know. We might go for exactly what it is that you want. We might want the same thing.
Well, that in terms of in the book, I'm very upfront about that part.
Okay.
So in the female book, I might have to, just say it in a way that's not so direct or so harsh. But with guys like challenge.
Yes.
Women prefer affirmation.
Yes.
And they receive things. Like, for example, if you have two kids and you have and it's time for dinner, two five-year-olds, you just say, Johnny, it's time for dinner.
Right.
Johnny's like, okay, Dad. He might have me hear you the first or second time.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny, it's time for dinner. A girl, you might say, Savannah, it's time for dinner. She's like, why are you yelling at me?
Yeah, right.
It's just because she may hear it in her brain differently.
Yeah.
The tone
might
be, you said it the same way, right?
Yeah.
So, but in terms of what you just mentioned, in terms of authenticity, I'm very, to your point, and that's really crucial, is that a lot of times guys will not be completely authentic with their women because they are afraid of his truth becoming a deal breaker.
I know.
And
that's what I'm saying. But go ahead and say that. Because if you get down the road and that thing comes up, and it will.
We have to.
Now there's, as they say in the military, a clusterfuck. Because now you have to deal with love and all these emotions. You know, you can't just walk away because now you're in love with what you thought was there.
Right.
Right. But now what's really there, you have to deal with it. And it may or may not be something that you signed up for. And and chances are it's probably not, because it wasn't revealed.
It wasn't revealed. And we have, and I challenge men in this book because, we do need to level up in a lot of ways.
Okay.
We need to learn how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
We need to learn how to be more authentic.
Yes.
And to put it out there in a loving way.
Yes.
The truth.
Yes.
And when you give a woman the ability to choose whether she is down for your where you are and who you are, even if she's not down, she'll respect you.
She'll respect you.
And if you
and
lie, now you're dealing with betrayal and woman scorn, and that can cause a lot of havoc in your life.
And a lot of disrespect.
And a lot of disrespect. And you will, and see, here's the irony is so crazy.
Let me hear it.
That if you are willing to be straight up,
mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, you will receive that which you wish, that you desire.
Come on.
It is a fact.
Say it. See, don't be just feeding me fluff now. Come on.
It's true. I mean, I'm living proof.
Because you get it.
I'm living proof. 9 times out of 10. You might get a few that might say, you might lose a few to say that's not for me.
That's okay. Yeah.
But the reward for what you achieve with it's being straight up, because she's opted in.
Yes.
And here's the thing.
Okay.
I started to take there's so much joy in knowing that she can never say I lied to her.
Come on. It was her decision.
She can't come back and say you lied.
And all she can do is be mad at herself.
Yes, sir.
And it is what it is. I love it. So let me ask you this. This is the caveat to that, though. When she tells you her truth and what she's down for, which may not be traditional, what, the traditional woman or what the persona of the traditional woman may be, when she tells you what her truth is and what she wants, are you in a position, you personally, are you in a position to accept that?
Yes, because, I say you can't ask for that which you're not willing to give.
Okay.
And so I know what I want.
Yes.
So I know that if I want what I want,
yeah,
that I have to be willing to give the same measure,
yes,
to the other person.
Yes.
And if what she's asking of me isn't in alignment with what I desire, well, then I need to be upfront with that.
That's right.
And that level of communication is so important. And I also deal with men who up-level. So say you up-level your life for a guy, and he is now a high social value male.
Okay.
Meaning that he's attracting women at the one percenters.
Yeah.
The top 5%.
Different caliber, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, now you're dealing with a whole different kind of woman.
Yes.
Independent.
Yeah.
Got her own thing going.
Yes. Yes.
Doesn't need your money.
Yes.
She's on a purpose.
Yes.
She has options.
Yes.
But this kind of woman can have the unconscious propensity to emasculate her man.
Well, yeah, that sometimes it does.
And that is why, in my opinion, some of these women who have it all are single.
You know, and I agree. I can agree with that. But at the same time...
Right? They don't even know they're doing it. Though.
I know.
Right?
At the same time, it also speaks to the, you know, a man being secure with himself.
Right.
Yeah.
A secure man who is well-versed in this unconscious behavior will make a choice.
Okay.
He'll say, I have so many options. Do I want to deal with that?
And that's what happens. That's
right.
That, I'm glad you said it. That's what happens. It really does. Like,
why would he? Here's the thing. Now, if he's in love.
Leveling up is the thing.
If he's
because
in
evolution
love,
has to happen.
Yes.
Go ahead.
If he's in love.
Okay.
Like, if he's in love with her enough.
Okay.
To say, I'm going to go down this road with you where we are going to confront your tendency to make me feel like I don't measure up to you.
Okay.
Unconsciously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It could be comparing him to something.
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You don't make as much money as
yeah.
I. All kinds
anything.
Of ways
yeah.
It comes out.
Yeah.
If he loves her enough and he's willing to confront that and she's willing to accept the reason why he may shut down emotionally could be because of this and like kind of get to the bottom of that and choose like, okay, I get what that is and make some corrections in that particular regard. If he's not that emotionally invested.
Okay, I get that. But
he may.
But that's with anything.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because it could be that. It could be her having such a strong personality that it emasculates the man, or it could be anything. It could be, I don't know, she talks too much. It could be anything. You know what I mean? So, you know, the choice, like you said, it all comes back to choice.
To choice.
And what resonates with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you're aligned with or do you align with that person? Because when you get into the spirituality of this, it's all about connection.
Yes.
And I think when you're in spirit, I think that's the best place to be, right?
Of course.
And when you run across someone that is in spirit, they tend to remind you of your connection with spirit.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Which makes you want to spend the most time with that person, because imagine someone that makes you feel like you with God. You know what I mean? And God is everything. God is that talent. God is you tap dancing across the stage. You know, God is you in Thailand in that water. God is everything. And this very human being has embodied that for you. This human being has tapped into that thing, which she then has no choice but to exude that. So I believe that when you find that connection, the little personality, little defects doesn't really matter as much because now you're not looking at her to be something else other than what she is and vice versa.
That's
just enjoying the connection that she has to spirit because you have that same connection.
Right.
And I think that trumps all the little faux pas because everything else is material.
Yeah. If she's committed to that on her committed to her own journey. And that's what we're trying to do is with the book series.
Yes.
Is to cultivate courtship.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So that literally, like, you know, men are coming, are choosing, like, what we're trying to do is cultivate courtship culture.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
That is not necessarily a present in the swipe right, swipe left paradigm of online social dating right now.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's no curation to weeding out people who have not, who have chosen personal growth and spirit.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So when you are now in a circle, you know, if you subscribe to the credo that we present, which is a credo of managing your priorities, a credo of spiritual ethics, personal ethics, refinement.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in a pool of people who, all right, I know that you are committed to your own spiritual growth and unfoldment.
Yes.
And so I am too.
Yes.
And so now if we have a connection that is that strong and we are come across these, whether it's, hey,
a little faux pas,
or even emasculation issues that can be dealt with in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that men are confused by the feminist movement.
Hmm.
They.
Okay. Yeah.
We're confused.
Yeah.
Because
we
don't know. Like, look, nowadays a guy can open up a car door for a woman and she can say, I can open up my own door.
And see, that's the part that's just...
That's true.
But that's...
You're running around the car.
That's the part that's a mess to me. Like, I think that's just some additive BS. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that should have been the premise of a feminist movement.
I agree.
I think what women want to say, and I don't want to speak for all women. I'd probably get in trouble doing that. But I think that we're just, you know, if we were to say something, it's we want to be heard.
Yes.
Fairness, equality, just like we're fighting in regards to race.
Absolutely.
Fairness and equality.
That's right.
And as it regards to jobs, right?
That's right.
As far as getting paid the same. If we're doing the same job.
You get the same money.
Get the same
money.
That's
I'm with you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's black and white. If you're a black man doing the same job as a white man, you should. You know what I mean? That's that part of it.
Right.
But as it regards to opening doors and taking out the trash and doing the heavy lifting, I'd say that's what y'all was put here for. Y'all was put here to do the heavy lifting.
We were.
Because
we're bigger.
Physical.
That's
Do that. Open my doors all day. Yeah. Pull out my chair.
Yeah.
Protect me.
Yeah.
Stand in the line of fire.
But when that's challenged on a societal level, cultural level, that confuses guys.
And I believe that's, it's just like, okay, dare I say it, the Bible, right?
Yeah.
It's up to different interpretations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it wasn't, there wouldn't be so many religions based on one book.
So,
while I believe that we should have definitely equal rights,
mm-hmm.
why I believe that you guys should, you know, chivalry should not be lost.
That's right.
I also believe that we have a lot of intellectual equity to bring to the conversation.
Yes.
Do not belittle us.
That's right.
You know, we're the mothers of this earth.
That's right.
You know, and to me, that speaks volumes.
That's right.
So, yeah, call us queen and treat us like goddesses. But no, I don't want your job. I don't want to have to physically assert myself.
Right.
But when I'm left as a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I'm being hurt and you walk past and you see me being beat up or someone's taking advantage
mm-hmm.
and you're not speaking up, when I try to walk in the studio and I can't get the song done because you're too busy
mm-hmm.
worrying about, you know, can you get inside of me,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and even my money is not green enough
mm-hmm.
because I haven't validated your little insecurity
mm-hmm.
by acting like I wanted to have sex with you mm-hmm. when all I wanted to do was get the song.
Do the work. Yeah.
All I wanted
Me
to
too,
do.
As in, yeah.
Yeah. So when those things happen, that's when, you know, you would hear people like myself rise up and go, wait a minute. Now.
That's right.
Because we can't have one without the other.
That's right. And men, our job is to honor that.
Yes. And equality doesn't look
that's right.
the same. My husband and I, we've had this conversation many times where, you know, he's a very fair and just person. So he's always looking for 50-50. Mm-hmm. Well, if I do this, you should do that. But I've always told him throughout the years, my 50% won't look like your 50%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My 50%, I'm a woman. So my 50%, and again, I know a lot of feminists is going to have my head, but it is what it is. My 50% may not look like getting under there fixing the car. You know, my 50% may not look like carrying all the groceries. You know, my 50% may not look like that.
Yeah.
You know, but the what I do for your heart.
There you go. And honoring.
Do, right. And what I do for your mind.
That's right.
You know, how I'm able to stand you up and lift you up so you can keep going.
Right. That is your power.
That's what I bring.
Your feminine strength and goddess nature.
Yes.
And hey, if you want to fix a car here and there.
If I, you know, fine. Fine. If I want to do that.
But
you
that's
know,
not your,
but I don't want my nails dirty. So
right, that's not your
I don't
obligation.
Want my fingers
right.
all busted up. Right. Like, but that's
yeah,
me.
That's right.
That's me. I'm not saying women can't fix cars. Don't start.
That's right. Women can't fix cars. They can do, you know,
y'all
all,
can do
all
whatever
the,
you want to do.
Yeah.
But why?
Like,
no, I'm just playing. Yeah. But yeah. So you know what? I do want to play this song. All I Need Is the Girl.
All I Need Is the Girl.
Is that the next single that we should be looking forward to?
That's the single that's going to come. You know, it's crazy. I actually offer a free stream of this song on my audiobook.
Yes.
For, you know, The Fine Art of Romance,
yes!
which is coming out. It's going to be on Audible, linked up in the next week or so with the book on Amazon. And so I thought I'd just have the song
sneak
for
preview.
You as
yes!
well. Yeah.
We get a sneak preview. Thank you. I love when they debut things on 2020 Vision. It makes me feel so special.
I mean, no one's heard it, but your people.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So all around the world, y'all get ready for the premiere of the single, All I Need Is the Girl. And it's also going to be available on the audiobook, which is called The Fine Art of Romance. Can you play that for me?
Got my tweed press, got my best bet. All I need now is the girl. Got my striped tie, got my hopes high. Got the time and the place, I got the rhythm. Now all I need's the girl to go with her. If she'll just appear, we'll take this big town for a world. If she'll say, my darling, I'm yours, I'll throw away my stripes. And my best friend, sweet. All I really need is my girl. I got my tweed press, I got my best. All I need now is my girl. I got my striped tie, got my hopes way up high. Got the time, got the place, I got rhythm. Now all I need is my girl to go with her. If she just appears, we'll take this big, big town. Oh, and if she'll say,
My baby, I'm yours. I'll go play my striped tie. Oh, and my best friend, sweet. All I really need is my girl.
My girl.
Such a classic, man.
Thank you. I feel like I need another no whiskey.
Yes, we can do that for you. We can accommodate that. Such a
thank
classic
you.
Man. Look at that
thank
shot.
You.
Look at that shot right there, man. Such a classic, man. It's like
you.
Going back in time, but in this day and time. How did you perfect that? You told me the story. I get it. But at some point, there had to be something that just took over that you felt like this is.
You know, I listened to, you know, I rattled off a bunch of my idols.
Mm-hmm.
But I really stand on their shoulders.
Yes.
You know, I really stand on the shoulders of the black
mm-hmm.
singers,
mm-hmm.
particularly the black crooners,
mm-hmm.
because there was so much nuance and art to what they did
mm-hmm.
and what I do. And I feel like it is my duty to keep the spirit of this music and the art form
mm-hmm.
alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't take that lightly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I essentially, I evoke
mm-hmm.
their spirits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for that.
You know?
Yes.
So that they will speak to
through
me
you. Yeah.
And through me.
Yes.
And so now what's so cool is that when their spirits sort of come through me, it's me,
mm-hmm.
but it's like a piece of information,
yes.
some wisdom.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, they're like, hey, I'm just going to give you this.
Yes. Yes.
You know, like
yes.
I give you a prime example. Uh-huh. So there's a great, famous crooner.
Okay.
His name is, Ernie Andrews.
Ernie Andrews. Okay.
He lives in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Ernie Andrews was really big.
Okay.
He sang with the big bands. He wasn't as big as maybe like Joe Williams, but
mm-hmm.
he had a nice, you know, career.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was down in Inglewood one time,
mm-hmm.
and Ernie was there.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie, I said, and there was like a jam session.
Uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
And so Ernie was there, and I came off the bandstand and he said, yeah, man. He goes, you know, I sing the blues. He said, but, you know, you sing these standards. And he said, that's what's up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's up. And
mm-hmm.
he said, but make sure you keep a little hot sauce on it. And when he said that, I was like, yo, I was like, what? You can only get that, right? And then he gave me another nugget. He said, you got a nice smile.
Right.
I said, thank you. He said, so you make sure when you walk across that stage, you keep flashing that smile.
Yes.
He said, because the ladies like something beautiful to look at.
Right. Right.
He said, never stand in one place too long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
he
mm-hmm.
said, because you want people to keep going like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, following you across the stage.
Yeah.
That keeps them interested.
Yeah.
He said, they're not going to go to sleep
yeah.
if they're going like this.
Right, right, right.
He said, they're going like this. They might just double. And so.
That's dope.
That's huge.
Yes. Yes.
That's huge.
Because it's just something you automatically do, but you never understood. You never thought about the science to
the
it.
The science to it.
Yeah.
And so now I am. And Johnny Hartman.
Uh-huh.
Johnny Hartman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I've read Johnny Hartman's book, and Johnny Hartman says something that was really prolific. He said, I never sing a sad song sad.
Huh.
I'm going to have a sip of my
whiskey.
You're going to
sip on that. You just let me sip on that, too. I'm going to sip and think,
A little water. It's just water.
It's just water. But yeah, it had to cool me off.
It had to cool you off. That was a hot note right there.
It had to cool me off.
Now think about that.
Yes, never sing a sad song.
Yeah.
Sad.
And so his reasoning behind that was, if you sing a sad song sad, now you're tapping into the melancholy, and people are not coming to see you live to feel worse than they already feel.
Okay.
They're coming to see you feel better than they felt, even if it's a sad song. So if you sing a sad song with hope,
okay,
you find the hope in
okay.
the sadness.
Okay.
It's like a comedian finding the funny in the trauma, right? If you find the hope in the sadness, now you've lifted the song that could make a person cry, but cry tears of hope versus tears of downtroddenness,
sadness. Wow, that's dope.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that with me. I'm going to steal that one.
You can have it.
So when you see me smiling, singing a sad song,
Yeah. And it can be introspective, but it goes against what people would assume.
Mm-hmm.
Like how, and it might not necessarily be like, oh, you're happy,
mm-hmm.
but if you get down in the dumps,
mm-hmm.
you don't really have anywhere to go.
Right. Right.
I mean, in terms of the hopeful aspect.
Yeah, down. You're going down. But you need to be able to go up, uplift.
It's just something to consider.
I like it.
Even if it's not what one adopts for every tune, maybe if it's now planted in one's consciousness,
yeah,
it may alter how they approach a particular song that could be sad.
I like it. I'm doing that. Salut for that.
Salut.
You know. We probably need about 3 more hours to get into your life and your career. I do want to touch on the mm-hmm. acting really quick.
Mm.
I do want to show them a clip. And then while we're doing that clip, we're going to get you ready because you promised me a live performance.
Oh, I'm going to give you a little something.
Yeah. So let's show your acting clip because you're just multifaceted. Speaking
Thank
of introspective,
you.
The journey that you took us on mm. with this. I didn't know. You brought out some things. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to let them see. I'm not going to keep talking about it.
Okay.
Can we show that reel, please?
We're taking the focus off St. Louis. We now have to re-energize our base.
It's like we're out of sight for a few months and suddenly we're out of mind.
Welcome home.
Go and get Mrs. Masters settled by the Mimeo. Manny, I want you with me when I call Supervisor Drake.
For I have sworn before you and Almighty God, saying,
"Hey, what up, man? You ain't from around here, huh? Hey, look, I ain't no trouble, man. I was mean, man. You don't know who you are."
You are, man.
It's my motherfucking block, nigga. Get off my motherfucking block.
1 Corinthians 6. Do you not know the wicked shall not inherit the kingdom of God?
Excuse me.
Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor male prostitutes, nor homosexual offenders, nor thieves, nor greedy, nor drunkards, nor slanderers, nor swindlers shall inherit the kingdom of God.
God hates you.
Unless we are partners and everything, so maybe you can take these damn cuffs off.
Later. Need your food.
Oh, you don't get it.
Pretty sure I do. Miss Wilson, I'm going to prescribe 2 things for you. Take some time off. Take a rest. If you lose consciousness again, don't take it lightly, okay? You need to be seen ASAP.
You like that kiss? I remember your first sermon. We were kids, but man, you were so eloquent at 13. You know, I wish I could preach like you Lord gave you this gift and you just went, threw it away.
But you see, it's never too late because God is a forgiving God.
It was either you or the old man. Nothing to be ashamed of.
You made this interview so easy.
Thank you.
You gave me so much content. I actually have more content than we actually had time, and that's usually the opposite. I usually have to stretch some things or whatever, but you made it so easy. I really wanted to get into your acting more, but we're getting, you know, to that time, so we're going to have to bring you back. That's
okay.
What's gonna have
well,
to
I'll
happen.
Come back.
We're going to have to bring you back as the actor.
Yes.
And the comedian.
Indeed.
I don't think I didn't see that, too. I was like, and he's funny, too. Come on. When does it ever end?
I know. It's crazy.
But you promised me that live performance, I couldn't have you here without you doing it.
Yeah. I'm glad it worked out.
Yes. This one is called Whispers in the Night.
Whispers in the Night.
Well,
on the new record.
Go on and whisper to me, baby. Go on. Do it.
The Bossa Nova.
When that music starts to play, I feel my body gently sway. I'm suddenly at ease, like a gentle breeze that whispers in the night. How our heartbeats intertwine each time your lips are close to mine. I see a falling star, hear a soft guitar that whispers in the night. Why does this only happen when I'm with you? I get lost in a dizzy deja vu, as if long ago this dance that we do, I've danced with you before. You softly speak to me of love. I say you're all I've ever dreamed of. We dance the words we hear, their music to my ear, all whispers in the night. Un beso quiero que recuerdo, tan mareado me pierdo. Este vale que balamos yo. El pasado de dio tiempo atrás, suavemente me tocas, eres el sueño que he soñado. Me hablas de amor, me ofrece tu calor, susurros en la noche. We dance the words we sing, their music to my ear, our whispers in the night. The night. Whispers in the night.
Even the Spanish, the whiskey had one of the lines screwed up, but it didn't matter. Think about Spanish, it still sound good.
It sound wonderful and romantic. Isn't it one of the romance languages anyway?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Besos que miras.
Yes.
Yo recuerdo.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for coming and blessing us with the beautiful music and your presence. We appreciate you here. You know, right? You know, it's about that time.
It just happened.
I
got here and it's like.
It's over.
In a jiffy.
People say, think like 2 hours. What are we going to do with it? But before you know it.
It's right there.
You have enough. You know, you have enough to talk about.
Well, you're great. You make it very conversational. You're really present.
Yeah.
And so, it's tempting not to turn the tide and ask you questions because you drop these nuggets that I want to know more about that. But I'll
come on your show.
I'm the interviewee today.
I'll come on your show to interview me. But right about now, I would like you to offer any last comments that you have, anything you want to tell the people,
as
well as what you have coming up next, and where can they find you, your handles, that they can get a hold to you.
Awesome. Well, Elijah Rock, at Elijah Rock on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So that's pretty simple. Yes. The book is out. The Fine Art of Romance. It's available now on Amazon, and we will be having the Audible connected soon. So, and making formal announcements. My next record, Matters of the Heart, is going to be coming out next year. So we're gearing up for a wonderful release, a 9-song album in English and a 4-song Spanish EP.
Yeah.
So 4 songs on the record are we did a separate translation and we sing them in Spanish. So I'm really excited about that.
That's exciting.
And then I'm working on a TV show, a pilot that kind of incorporates everything in a really, interesting, sort of late night talk show format. That's going to be really sexy.
Yes.
So I just want to say that, to leave your audience with this notion, and that is, God gave you gifts, and it is your job to investigate those gifts and to put time and energy into the cultivation of your gifts and then allow God to make it happen.
Mm.
Don't focus on the how. Focus on the why and the what.
Mm.
And if you can do just that, identify why, identify what it is you desire, and allow God to fill in the what, and voila, you literally will see magic unfold right behind your eye, right in front of your eyes. When people talk about magic, God magic is real.
Ooh-wee.
There's black magic.
Ooh-wee.
But God magic is the realest thing alive.
Come on.
And so I just want to say that my life is a reflection of that core belief. And I wish I wish everyone to have explore the belief, because once that happens and you start experiencing the joy and the adventure and the spontaneity and the creative impulses that will manifest more creation, your life just gets better.
Gets better and better. Come on.
And there are no limitations because people go, like the thing about COVID that's so interesting, and I know that a lot of people are struggling, and my heart goes out to those who are struggling.
Yes.
But this is a time to delve deep inside and to find what is it that makes me unique.
That's right.
Because there is always a place for you.
Yeah.
There are no two plants are the same.
No, not at all.
No two trees are the same.
Not at all.
And so your oak, your redwood is just as powerful as anybody else's.
That's right.
And no two people have the same dream.
That's right.
I'll leave you at that.
That's right. Thank you, Elijah. Thank you so much. Spoken like a true artist.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Appreciate having you here. Thank you for coming to play with us on 2020 Vision.
It's been funny. It's been great.
Hey, man, we got to have you back.
Yeah.
And we'll have you back on the actor and the comedy side.
Hey, you know what?
We
and
like
maybe
to
I'll bring some
truth.
Whiskey.
Yes.
And you know what? When I come back, I'm going to make you a cable car. Talk about that next
a
time.
Cable car?
Yeah, that's an old 1940s drink. He know about it.
All right, is it going to have me turned up?
No, you going to. My cable cars
smooth.
Are really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, he know about it.
Well, you guys, my name is Amira the Songstress, and the moral of the story today is what it is always. That's love, life, and light. Elijah talked about not only perseverance, but actually following your road, following your journey, not jumping on anyone else's journey, but following your own personal journey. And there's nothing wrong with getting help from spirit. There's nothing wrong with getting help from the energies that has gone before you. There's nothing wrong with tapping into spirit, which allows you to have access to the Sammy Davis Jr.'s and the Fred Astaire's and all of the greatest powers that ever graced this earth. It's yours. It's yours for the taking. It's yours for the using. Don't let them tell you it's evil. Don't let them tell you it's wicked. And it's time for us to redefine black magic. What we are is magic. Again, my name is Amira the Songstress, and you can find me on Instagram at Amira the Songstress, YouTube at Amira the Songstress, Facebook at Amira the Songstress, as well as Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, and anywhere you want to listen. And remember, stay focused.
No regrets, no regrets, no regrets.
Let me fix my crown, baby. Like dominoes, yeah, it's going down. My feet off the ground, elevated. You feel my soul when you hear my sound. And I don't know why you, like a red light that don't ever change. And you should know why I'm merging to the other lane. I'm getting close, I'm up next, no regrets, making hits is a reflex. I'm getting close, don't take a second, second guess, riding high so you know I'm blessed. Oh, yeah. I'm getting close, I'm up next, no regrets, making hits is a reflex. No regrets, no regrets, no regrets. Oh, I'm so happy, baby. Yeah, I'm turned on and tuned into that frequency. Bring love and light and healing in my energy. Hear a major difference in these minor melodies. And I don't know why you're familiar faces. In strange places, they don't ever change. You should know why I'm merging to the other lane. I'm getting close, I'm up next, no regrets, making hits is a reflex.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting close, don't take a second, second guess, riding high so you know I'm blessed.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting.
No regrets, making hits is a reflex.
Baby, baby, I'm getting close.
Don't take a second, second guess. Riding high so you know I'm blessed.
I came with the keys to the industry. I came with the keys to the industry. I came with the keys to the industry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm built for this. Came with the keys to the industry. I came with the keys to the industry. I came with the keys to the industry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting close. I'm up next. No regrets. Making hits is a reflex.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting close. Don't take a second, second guess. Riding high so you know I'm blessed.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting close. I'm up next. No regrets. Making hits is a reflex.
Baby, baby, I'm getting close.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tune in and listen. Queens on a mission. Dripping the mic on Sunday nights, presenting you with 2020 vision. So join us this day and every Sunday night with the Mirror the Songstress on Blog Talk Radio. A for sure way to start your week off right. 2020 Visions on Drip the Mic.
No regrets. No regrets.
The Mirror the Songstress.
No regrets.
You're tapped into 2020 Visions of Drip the Mic Network. All is well. Stay focused.
Hey, 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 you guys. We made it back in here another Sunday. I'm so excited. Yes, there we go. I like that. All right. And I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I have the wonderful, the phenomenal, the extraordinary Elijah Rock joining me today. You guys give him a welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to have a good time today. You know, we're bringing you all the talent, different talents from different walks of life. But before we do that, you guys know how I like to do it. I have a few shout-outs that I want to give. First of all, I want to shout out my makeup artist, Leah. She beats this face, honey. Yes, she does. And also Bree. She keeps this hair together for me. You can get Leah at I Love Lee on Instagram, and you can get Brianna at Brianna Sheehy on Instagram as well. But first, I want to give a few shout-outs. First, you know, I want to shout-out family. My children and family, we actually, last week I was missing, and I'm just glad to be back today, but I was had to show a rerun because I had to go out of town. My family members, one of my family members passed away, and it was on the side of my children's family, and it was just very important to see my family together. It was very important to see my children and their siblings together. You know how blended families work, and sometimes brothers and sisters are not able to see each other as much. But we were able to bring those boys together and let them celebrate life, celebrate being with each other. And you know, we went for a sad occasion, but it turned into a major celebration just having them back together. So I want to shout out my boys. I call them Jaja Leek for Joshua, DeAndre, and Malik. So, yeah, show that for me. They were having such a good time. Yeah. Family, friends that are like family was in that video. The yellow boys was mine. Call them the yellow boys. The beige.
Snicker.
Poor babies, they get called all kinds of things. Light skinned folks, y'all just get called all kinds.
They be like, you look like a butterfinger. Hey. That was Hershey last week.
Right. We come in all shades and beautiful hues, you know.
That's right.
So next up we have a video from the DJ Patton, and it's just I don't know. I thought this was special because it's just a man, a black man honoring women, And I like to see that as much as I can. Show that. This was a TikTok video. Show that for me.
Ladies, I'm letting y'all know now, if you walking down the street and there's a dude on some weird stuff following you and you're not comfortable and you see me across the street or you see me somewhere, do not hesitate to come up. Let me know, and I promise you I'll act like your brother, your boyfriend, your best friend, whoever, and I'll make sure you get to where you're going. And fellas, use this sound. Let's get this blown up on TikTok so ladies can see all the faces of the men that got they back in a situation like this, so we don't have nothing crazy happening no more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with that.
You with it?
I'm with that. 100%.
I was just going to ask you how you feel about that.
Oh, yeah, that's what the book is about. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. You know, it's all relative.
But that's,
you'll see.
I affirm that.
Good. I was going to ask you. And so if you were walking down the street and you saw something going on that didn't look right and it was, you know, something against a woman.
Oh, yeah. You have to address it in a way that makes you feel safe.
Okay.
You know, whether it's, you know, calling the cops,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's you stepping in personally.
Yes.
Because I do believe in safety first.
Yes.
I mean, if a guy's, you know,
yeah,
toting the gun, you might want to tread lightly.
Tread lightly.
But
right.
You must do something.
You got to do something.
You must. It's our duty.
Good. You know what? Chivalry is not dead.
It is not.
It's not dead.
No.
Yeah, let's start spreading that message.
Yeah.
Chivalry is not dead. You know, you just got to find the right man or the right people or the, you know,
mm-hmm.
have the right understanding.
That's
so
right.
I'm with that for sure. And then next we have, I want to shout out Patricia Smith for posting this video. And it kind of digs into our history as a black community. Like we were just talking about, we come in all kinds of shades and
mm-hmm.
hues. And but sometimes we may have colorist thoughts or colorism inside our own community.
Mm, indeed.
And so sometimes it takes someone that seems to be the benefactor of the colorist antics that goes on sometimes to speak out against it and really talk about it and really dig into the concept
mm-hmm.
of different shades in the black community,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's play that video.
This is for the boys who like light-skinned girls. I am not your fetish. I am not your token. You're too scared of black coffee, so you ask for cream in your cup, so you can't see your own reflection, or better yet, your mother's. Dark rum is too strong for little boys with no spines. No, you like white wine. The shapely glass is more fun to hold in front of your friends to prove your class, but I am not white wine. I am moonshine you thought would be kind going down your throat. But you get no chaser, no metaphor. Dark boys don't like dark girls because white man said divide and conquer and then sewed the paper bag behind your eyelids. I am not the cream in your coffee or your pretty wine glass. I am rubbing alcohol in your wounds infected by hate that was not your own design. I will not let you off easy. I will burn and bubble and show you that it's nothing but espresso in your veins. I am not your fetish. I am your wake-up call.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
That is heavy.
I can tell the way you said.
Yeah, that is heavy, and but I understand.
Yeah,
I understand her sentiment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And why she may feel that way.
Yes,
and why dark-skinned women feel like sometimes they feel like they're being overlooked,
mm-hmm.
especially with high social value
yes.
males who, you know, this yeah. is the biggest thing I hear from black
women,
darker
yeah.
women,
yeah.
is that, you know, when he becomes successful,
mm-hmm.
he going to be with a...
He going to get him a life view. You ain't want to say it. Don't worry, I'll say it.
Because it's not true for every guy,
yes.
but I get it. Get it because we do see it.
Yes.
I mean, it is a fact that
mm-hmm.
it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And she addresses it in a very artful way, I must say.
Elegant, too.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke eloquently
about
it.
That was poetry.
It. Yes, yes. And, you know, I don't – one thing I wanted to highlight from what I get from what she's saying is that, you know, it didn't start with the black community. It didn't start with us.
Right.
You know, if we watch TV or even music videos, we see what's highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
And so before, it was almost taboo to have a black woman
mm-hmm.
on TV to represent or to be aligned with a black man. You
mm-hmm.
know, once the black man became more successful, it was almost like they didn't even want to show that successful black man with a black woman.
Mm.
Right. And then so it went from, you know, white woman to pretty much Hispanic woman. Then it went to light-skinned black woman.
Yes. And what's interesting about the colonial mindset mm. is that it transcends cultures.
Yes.
Because when you go to, I was in Thailand a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
The marquee, when you go in the airport,
uh-huh.
the whiter, uh-huh. they, I mean, literally banners for skin whitening.
Lightening. Yes, products.
Products,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Which is phenomenal.
It's crazy. Like over in Asia, but especially Thailand, it's all about the whiter, the lighter, the better. And I'm thinking, you guys are already light. What are you lightening your skin even more? But it's even you read the products and it says, get rid of that nasty melanin. That's what it says, like, on the product.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? What?
Really?
But it is a brainwash
mm-hmm.
that has happened not just in America, but I would say worldwide.
Around the world.
Yeah.
You know, white is right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah.
But yet, it's the brown people's culture
that
and our music that's appropriated across the board.
Right.
Which,
right.
you know, it's not a lot of light-skinned rappers besides Drake. That are that big. I mean, really, right? How many light-skinned rappers are there?
It's the craziest case of love-hate that I've ever seen. You know,
you
ever meet a person that you know love, hate you, you know, love you, wish they could be you, hate you because they can't be.
Whew,
that's
what
that's
it comes a whole,
down to. So, moving on, I want to shout out to Shoe Mess for putting this video together. And as we continue and go through our history, let's see what's happening. Like I said, sometimes we think that the revolution is over because it's not being televised,
mm.
but that's all it is. It's just not being televised. So let's continue with this and talk about it.
If you've ever wondered why there are no police at this rally, but lots of police at these rallies, it's for the same reason you never see Miley Cyrus and Hannah Montana together. Or Superman and Clark Kent, Batman and Bruce Wayne. Don't think for a second that police weren't in that crowd. They were just in a different uniform.
Wow.
And the revolution continues.
Wow.
But I love it when we all come together, you know, under one nation,
mm-hmm.
under God. Indivisible
mm-hmm.
for justice
mm-hmm.
for all.
That's right.
I love it. And sometimes we have to step outside ourselves and speak out against what we know is wrong.
It's true.
And I believe that the thing that's so different about this, as they're calling it race war. I call it an uprising.
Mm.
I think what's so different about it is that has affected everyone around the world
mm-hmm.
and people are, everyone is finally speaking out saying, this is just not right.
Yeah, and I love the sentiment. And, you know, what I see the young people really,
mm.
really digging their heels
mm-hmm.
into this notion of enough's enough.
Enough is enough.
And we feel it, but the young people are standing behind
that's
that.
Right.
Because enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
You know,
and it's only right because the young people, they're the ones that's going to run the world.
That's right.
They're going to be our dignitaries.
That's right.
They're going to be the ones that make the laws.
That's right.
So it's only right that they're the one that starts the change.
That's right.
You know,
and they're approaching it from a systemic, through the systemic issues
mm.
that our country is
mm.
facing. And they understand that the laws must be rewritten.
Yes.
Versus, you know, just. You know, so they get both sides
yep.
of what needs to happen. And that's what I love.
I love
it's like,
it.
You know, they're educated.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I mean,
yes.
look at all the sisters coming out of, you know, Harvard
uh-huh.
Law.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Come on, man.
You can't,
magic.
You know, it's
magic.
It's time.
Yeah. And organized. That's what I like to see.
We're organized.
You know, at first it seemed a little chaotic, you know, especially from what we were being shown.
Right.
Through the media.
Right.
But when you sat back and looked at this thing, it's like, wow, they're organized.
They're organized, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the key to anything. So finally, as we continue down this road of Black history, I always want to show things that is going to continue our uplifting, our uprising, and I want to be able to give you information. I would like to be your source of information as to what we can do to continue uplifting our community. And so this last video, I want to shout out to Short Hair Chai for posting this TikTok video. Can you play that for me?
Hey, I'm Black. You follow me, I follow back. And that's facts. You my homie and I got your back. We got talent. Everybody need to see it. So with that being said, I'm going to repeat it. Let's sing it. Hey, I'm Black. You follow me, I follow back. And that's facts.
So, you guys, I hope you guys caught that information. If not, rewind it or either follow Short Hair Chai on Instagram. And it was showing you that there is a bank, a Black bank, a Black-owned bank called United. So she had her card. She got her debit card, and she opened up her bank account. You know, it's a way to support us.
That's right.
So I'm excited.
That's great.
A good end to a good story.
Put your dollar.
So I want to get into this commentary, and then we're going to get this show on the road. Like I said, we have Elijah Rock in the building today, and I named this commentary Black Magic.
Wow.
Yes. What defines Black magic? Is it evil magic, or is it simply the way Sammy Davis Jr., the way he moved across the stage as if he was walking on air? Is Black magic what people with ill will towards humanity use to conquer the world, or is it simply how Cab Calloway knew how to light up the room at the Cotton Club? Well, we definitely know that what Black girl magic means, but let's talk about Black man magic, something that my guest today has exemplified in his exciting career. So unexpected. Who knew that Fred Astaire would reappear in the form of a charmingly handsome Black man? Elijah Rock is a full entertainer. He's a decorated vocalist, actor, dancer, and author. Please give a warm 2020 vision welcome to the crooning extraordinaire, Elijah Rock.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
No worries.
Thank
yes,
you.
You're here. Took you long enough.
Someone asked me, like, when did you guys meet? How did you meet? And I said, I can't remember, exactly, but I just remember we're just like, I've been following her on social media. Uh-huh. She's been following me. Uh-huh. And do you remember how did you discover me?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question.
Okay.
I'm in the interview.
Okay.
He conducted the interview, yeah. No, but we were working on the Natalie Cole review.
That's right.
Yes. And we had Mahesh.
That's right.
One of Natalie Cole's pianists.
That's right.
And, oh, my God, they're going to kill me. I just spaced his name on bass.
Yes. I know you're talking about
that. But what a Natalie Cole.
Yes.
Bass player. I cannot think of his name. He's going to kill me. They're going to kill me.
Because his face is right there.
Yeah.
It is right there. Yeah.
You know, but we had all heavy hitters. And we were doing the tribute to Natalie Cole, and I was singing her R&B soul music, and Stelita was singing her jazz tunes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we needed a Nat King Cole.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, we needed a Nat King Cole to do Unforgettable.
Unforgettable. What a song.
And I believe it was Mahesh that said, I know exactly who to call.
Yeah.
And you came in, you were so professional, we was in rehearsal, we was trying to get things together. The parking was crazy in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
But you came in and did your thing, you know, sang, and, you know, everything was everything. It was professional. You came in, did your thing, and you were out of there. But ever since then, we started following each other. You were at Vitello's as well several times. I started getting all your newsletters and things of that nature. So I've been following your career as well as you've been following me. I've been
following
you too. So I knew that we had to get you on here. This is going to be such a great show. People they haven't seen a you You know what I mean?
Thank you.
They don't know what this is, but they'll know by the time we're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how we met. You remember now?
I remember well because I remember where it was and I remember the parking.
Yeah. Because did your car, wasn't your car?
It wasn't my car. It's another car.
Yeah. Somebody's car. I don't know if they got towed. They got ticketed. Something happened.
Yeah.
It was a car pulling. No, it was a tow truck pulling up. And everybody ran out of the studios like, hell no.
See what's going on. Those some expensive tickets down there in Santa Monica.
So who was asking you? You said someone was asking you, how'd you meet me, huh?
Yeah, because, you know, my friend who, you know, I'm down, because like I said yesterday, I didn't plan on being in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened. And so I was like, well. Yeah, I mean, because you mentioned the studio,
yeah.
And I was like, let me see what's going on. So my friend was like, how did you meet her? And I was like, let me think.
You're such a superstar. You run into every. You have no idea.
I meet a lot of people, but you know, you were just familiar,
mm-hmm.
and now it all makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you told me that.
Yeah. I'm glad I still have that memory.
Absolutely.
You know? So, I love to take the audience from the beginning to the middle to the end.
Okay.
So, forgive me if I ask, you know, rudimentary questions, but I want everyone to know you. I know there's a lot of people that know you. I know you have a huge following. There's so many accolades that we're going to talk about, we're going to get into, but I really want them to just get to know you, you know, the man behind the voice and the dancing and the actor and the author. I really want them to get to know you. So, Where did you hail from? Did you start in Los Angeles or where did you come from?
Well, I'm from Cleveland.
Okay, I thought you fell out the sky.
Cleveland, Ohio. You know, it's funny because there's a lot of entertainers from Cleveland.
Yes, it is.
You know, the list is long.
Yes.
From Vanessa Bell Calloway.
Yes.
You know, Steve Harvey.
Yes.
And so many. So I came up in Cleveland, born and raised in Cleveland.
Okay.
And the cool thing about Cleveland is that Cleveland has such a rich cultural arts community.
Okay.
Caramel House is in Cleveland, which is the first black community theater in the country.
Okay.
Negro Ensemble in New York was the first black theater company.
Okay.
But Caramel House, so a lot of the older black entertainers like Bill Cobbs, character actor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people came up through Caramel House in Cleveland.
Okay.
And so I was so fortunate to have Caramel in my backyard.
Okay.
But my earliest training came from me being in the gospel choir in my Mennonite church, my urban Mennonite church in inner city Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Where we had the most multicultural gospel choir, and everyone, you know what I mean? And it was so cool because I was singing the hymns, I was singing the spirituals, and the gospel music, right?
Okay.
And then I went to a private Jewish boys' school where I was introduced to classical music.
Okay, so wait, you were in a gospel choir, but you did sing hymns and you did sing classical.
Mm-hmm.
So when did your parents decide, okay, just send them to this private, what was it, a private?
A boy school.
A Jewish school. That's where I was going.
Yeah.
When did they say, hey, let's send them there?
Well, it's, you know, I went there, I started going there in Cleveland, at kindergarten.
Okay.
And my mom just, it was just one of the, you know, it's one of the best schools.
Yes.
So she wanted her son to have the best
education
that he, you know,
which
that
we
I
do.
Could have.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, they saw that I had a musical gift.
Okay.
And so it was this interesting parallel support system of the teachers in school seeing I had a gift, the people in church seeing I had a gift, because, you know, they had me soloing.
Right.
your first little solo in front of your church parishioners is experience, right? A lot of black singers and singers in general, we grew up singing in a church, right?
Yes.
So when there was one of our music ministers, his name was Mr. Hughes.
Okay.
And Mr. Hughes sang classical music.
Okay.
He was a classical singer.
Okay.
So Mr. Hughes suggested to my mother that, you know, when I was about 10, 11, as a boy soprano that I should audition for the Cleveland Opera Children's Chorus
and
the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus.
Okay.
And as a boy soprano, I got in.
Yes.
And so that was coupled with me being in musicals at school.
Yes.
So we, you know, I was Charlotte in Charlotte's Web. That was my first gig. Right. As a boy soprano, I must be like fifth grade.
Oh my God!
Right?
It goes to show where your voice was. First soprano.
Yeah, I was a boy soprano. Most baritones were sopranos until the voice changes, and so that was huge for me because when I was with the Cleveland Orchestra Children's Chorus and the Cleveland Opera Children's Chorus, where I got to sing in La Boheme, Turandot.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen, you are in a very professional situation.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, the training is rigorous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that was the beginning and the foundation of everything that came after.
When did you understand that you actually not just had a knack for this type of music, but that you actually loved and enjoyed it? Because, you know, you had gospel roots, and you know what that is, and that usually leads us to R&B, you know, soul, you know, what they call soul. When did you say, like, this is where it is for me, this is what resonates with me?
Well, this music is, see, it's interesting with classical music because the classical voice is a voice that God gives you, right? And even though I would hear what some of the contemporary gospel or soul artists were doing vocally, those kinds of vocal calisthenics weren't my gift.
Okay.
And so because I had these classical wonderful influences around me, and my mother was born with a natural classical voice.
Wow.
So
okay.
In the gospel choir, when you heard that, it's my mom, so we knew it was in me. I recognized that it was in me, and I had people around me that helped to cultivate it. And then when I made that connection with classical voice and the Negro spiritual, when I became aware of Paul Robeson William Warfield, then my understanding of what we bring to the hymns and the spirituals and classical voice is so unique and so rich that I began to embrace that.
So as you're going through school, did you finish in this private Jewish all-boys school? Did you go all the way through high school in this school?
Yeah, I went from K through 12, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you had homeboys there. Oh, man, you sing like that. You didn't go through that.
Well, it's interesting because we had kids that would start to integrate into our school via athletics by the seventh and eighth grade, right? Some of them didn't come from, you know, they came from lesser means.
Yeah.
And that was cool for me because even though I went to the church that I went to, my mom's from the South. And my mom comes from a big family, right?
Yeah.
So just on my grandmother's side, she's the eldest of 12. Yeah. And she got
Of
12 on her dad's side, right?
Wow.
Okay. So out of that 12, 9 migrated to Cleveland from Florida, where my mom, Florida, Georgia.
Originally from.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had this nucleus of a family, Cleveland, that, you know, they were like, listen, you know, we know you going to university school during the week, but you with us now.
Okay.
Right. So you know, people talk about code switching. I was code switching since I was
five.
Right?
Right.
I mean, you know, like unconsciously code switching, right? And so that experience was so crucial for me because it just helped me to understand that, you know, this music is so important. And I saw the connection, you know, the connection between our ancestry and these songs that got us through 400 years of slavery.
That's right.
And though we have artists who communicate the pain and the suffering of our experience in the black church.
Mm-hmm.
You also had singers like Paul Robeson and Marian Anderson
mm-hmm.
who were taking our gifts, and we were in communities that didn't look like us.
That's right.
To deliver the message.
To deliver the message.
So.
Yeah, it has to be told.
It has to be told.
Yes. That's why we're here today. So we, as we continue to celebrate you, one of the things that we do during when we bring a music guest on, you fit into, actually you're going to fit into more than one category today, but one of the categories that you fit into is music is everything. So we like to show a collage and of music artists that we love and just an homage to them. And we put that together and we want you to take a look at
it. Wow, that's cool.
Play that for me.
But no other man's gonna do. So I'm saving all my love for you. Drumming my pain with this finger. Singing my life with the words. Killing me softly with.
All eyes on me, living like a thug, nigga, until the day I die, living like a football player. All eyes on me.
Around the world I've searched for you. I've traveled on when hope was gone to keep a rendezvous. I know somewhere, sometime, somehow, you'd look at me. I would see that smile you're smiling now. For once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me. Not like it's hurt me before. And if she'll say, my baby, I'm yours, I'll throw away my striped tie. Oh, and my best friend. Sweet. All I really need is my girl. Lord, without you, baby, without you, don't get around much anymore.
For my debut album, Gershwin for My Soul, which was my homage to George and Ira Gershwin, my first solo record.
You laugh tonight and cry tomorrow when you behold your shadow sleep. Jiggle-o and jiggle-ette and wake up to find their eyes are wet with tears that tell of broken dreams.
That was fantastic. I was a kid in Carmen and La Bohème and Torrendal. And then it all went downhill when my voice changed.
The matters of your heart. Well, it's with me now. The matters of your heart. And so did I. And oh, when I remember spring, all the joy that love would bring,
I will be remembering the shadow of your smile.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We wanna propose a toast to you.
Oh.
We wanna celebrate your career today.
Oh,
here
thank
on
you.
2020 Vision. And you know, what we do, we've been each month we introduce a new whiskey. And my husband tells us all about it because he's the whiskey drinker in the house.
Yeah, we were talking.
And I just come along for the ride.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what we have this time around. Can we see that? Good? Is that good? Is that in there?
Yeah, it is.
I hope I don't try because I'm clumsy.
So this month we're going to do a Suntory whiskey. It's a Japanese, and this one's a blended Japanese whiskey. So it's more than just one type of whiskey. It's not just a rye or just one specific type. It's blended. So it's got a couple different versions that they kind of mix together.
Okay.
And then just for you know, for everybody's educational purposes, Japanese mm-hmm. whiskeys are closer to like scotches,
mm-hmm.
so they're
mm-hmm.
so they're typically a little bit smoother than some of the other whiskeys, and not as sweet as like say bourbons or so, you know, so on and so forth. So
okay, mm-hmm. so let's pour this up and
Japanese whiskey.
Get this going, so we can celebrate Elijah's career. We love it. We're excited. We love talent here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the show is based on music, acting, comedy, and spirituality.
Mm.
So you can see how you fit in all those categories.
Thank you.
Is that mine?
Woo.
you never.
He gave her a gentleman's pour.
I know. That can't be mine. Okay. All right. Thank you for coming on 2020 Vision, and we
Thank
want to propose
you.
A toast to your career, and congratulations on everything that you have accomplished and that you're still going to do. And thank you for paving the way for us.
Thank you.
Salut. Oh,
this
bad.
Is nice.
Peppery a little bit in my nose, but it's not bad. I'm trying them all out.
Mm-hmm.
So far, Green Spot is my favorite, and what's the other one I like? Belvini 14. This one is light. It's not bad. It kind of has a the little that you drink at the little the is it sakura? Was it sakura? What's the name of the? Never mind. It's gonna take too long for us to figure it out.
Very nice.
Yeah, very light. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get into the Great American Songbook. I know you're blazing the trail and you've been touring.
Yes.
And doing the I would say the repertoire
mm-hmm.
of the Great American Songbook. Explain to us what it actually is for those who doesn't know, and tell us why and how you chose to go into that. I would say go down that road of music. What made you?
That's
go
a
into
great
that?
Question.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Great American Songbook is music from the 1920s through the 1940s, 50s.
Okay.
And that was the standard popular music of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So some people refer to them as the standards.
Okay, yes.
But that's also the Great American Songbook.
Okay. All right, I knew that one. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you are on the classical track,
okay.
So when I continue to develop as a singer
mm-hmm.
and you're learning classical repertoire, mm-hmm. you're also learning the early American composer
okay.
Repertoire, like
mm-hmm.
Aaron Copland,
mm-hmm.
people like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that it extends to Gershwin. George and Ira Gershwin,
yeah.
Cole Porter,
mm-hmm.
Rodgers and Hart,
mm-hmm.
Irving Berlin, the
early American musical music, the early films in the, 20s to 40s, where this music was featured. And so it is an extension of classical music.
Okay.
It is America's classical music, because America's classical music is the amalgamation of European musical themes and jazz and blues themes, which we as a race cultivated. Right. So you got the Negro spiritual, which feeds into blues and jazz, which incorporates with the early American classical composers. Now you get the Great American Songbook in America's true first musical body of work. And that's what makes us so unique, is that when you talk about American music, it is a combination of both. And that's what, you know, Wynton Marsalis talks about that all the time, you know, but it's in those European artists like Gershwin, who were Jews, for example, what makes Porgy and Bess Porgy and Bess is that he actually hung out with the Gullah people in the Carolinas to understand how the Gullah people talk, how they communicate their music, and he wanted to get it right. And for all intents and purposes, one can argue he did, in the way he brought it together. And so, and then actually showcase that that music in a classical context, so that again it could reverberate to a community that may not go to Harlem. You know what I mean? I mean, but the hip folk, white or black, they were going to the Cotton Club. You know, they were going to the Savoy. They were going to these places and seeing where our music was coming from. And so when people talk about Sinatra and they talk about Elvis and some of the you know, white artists who have become famous, whether, you know, many of them who took advantages, maybe not all, but those that did acknowledge where they got the soul. I'm cool with that. The ones, you know, it's when the appropriation happens and there's no
acknowledgement.
Acknowledgement is what I have a problem with. So that's how I got into that music. And then I got turned on to Sammy Davis Jr. And then, you know, so when I started to get into the crates of Sammy Davis, Johnny Hartman, Billy Eckstein, you know, Joe Williams, and so many that people don't even talk about, Freddie Cole, Nat King Cole. I understood that Ella, Sarah Vaughan, Nancy Wilson, all these beautiful sisters. We were the music. I mean, it came from us. And so for me, it was like to have an opportunity to come from a classical background, because a lot of the singers who sang that movie, that music in the early days, were classically trained. In bel canto. That is a lost art. And for some reason now bel canto has been this thing that's reserved for classical music. But bel canto singers were singing classical pop and jazz. Because they learned technique.
You know, I was upon doing research and just kind of watching you perform, I like, obviously I like watching, but I like the fact that it feels like you're telling the story when you're singing, when you're performing. And I've watched you in front of several different audiences, and everyone's very attentive, because it's like, it's almost a curiosity, but they're being thrilled at the same time. Almost a curiosity, but anyway, they're being, you know, thrilled at the same time. And so I like, it looks like you're giving them an education.
That's powerful.
It looks like you're telling the story. Like, this is really how the story should have been told. That's what it looks like to me when I'm watching.
Well, you know, it's so funny you mentioned, interesting you mentioned storytelling. Storytelling is so key. And, you know, I have a few students, and I really try to reiterate this aspect. Storytelling is so crucial. And there's this
the cool thing about this music is these songs were cultivated in such a masterful way.
Right.
And I always say to people, like, regardless of what kind of music you write, if you want to be a well-rounded songwriter, it bodes well if you have an understanding of the structure of what made these songs timeless.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And there was a way that they talked about love and romance and the loss of love and the hope of love and courtship, requited love, that was so nuanced and so in the way that they created metaphor and ignited your imagination. They didn't have to tell you everything like some of the music today. It's like, did we really have to hear
that? Did you have to say
like,
that?
All of it? Like, could a little bit be left to the imagination?
Yes.
And it takes more skill to do that.
And I feel like we're always being told to water it down now, you know, as we write. It's too, you know, we use too many metaphors, you know, but then again, Lil Wayne comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes like the metaphor king, you know, and it's like, okay, well,
metaphors are great. Right, it's like, just like, do we need to be so graphic?
And right. And I understand that. And so what I was saying that before, like, you know, even the way Prince writes,
right.
You know, you always have to like, you have to damn near study his music.
Even Michael.
Yes. You know, and I miss that. Yeah. And I still write like that. Yeah. Like I still write with, you know, to make you think, you know, but you're being told constantly when you're in by big industry, when you're in the studio, like you got to water it down a little, you know, you got to be more clever and just make the same point, but keep it basic. But remember, I feel like popular music, pop music is kind of based on a sixth grade education. Like if, you know, when you speak to the masses, you speak to them on a sixth grade level.
Yeah.
And that way you get everybody, you encompass everybody. So I think it comes down to communication and what wavelength that or what frequency we're on at that moment.
Yeah. And some of the greatest songs are that we love are really like nursery rhymes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we love. Yeah. You know, we don't know the ABCs. We know the melody. We know ABC, you know, how to say it just straight.
It's simple, simple song.
Yeah.
And so I write songs in this vein.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, I'm so happy to have the opportunity to keep this music relevant because I do feel like I'm on an island by myself. And
but that's not a bad thing. People tend to win when they're, you know, when they can set themselves apart, something different.
Yeah. Well, it has been working out for me.
Yeah.
In that regard.
I say it has.
Yeah, it has. And it's, you know, Freddie Cole just died, and, you know, he was the last great Sebastian of this, you know, an African-American male doing this music, Freddie, Nat King Cole's brother.
Okay.
And it's so interesting. He passed a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah.
And when he passed, I really, because I got to meet him again in New York over the holiday.
Okay. When was the first time?
About 15 years ago on a cruise
ship
in the Mediterranean.
You guys were singing?
I was the lead singer of a production show, and he was on a jazz cruise as the headliner.
Yeah.
And so I spent like 2 weeks hanging out with him in the band.
Yeah.
And he dropped some nuggets on me that I'll never forget. And when he passed away, I had this overwhelming sense of a baton being passed.
I was going to say.
And that was pretty profound.
Yes. You felt the energy, huh?
Oh, it was deep.
It's beautiful. People don't understand that energy, first of all, will not be killed nor destroyed.
Mm-mm.
And it is here for the taking. It is for us, for our utilization.
Yeah.
More power into the universe is everything. We can utilize that, you know, at any given moment, just tap into it. So the fact that you received that and accepted that, that's great.
And he could tell a story.
Yeah.
Oh, to have him say good things about you and to say, you know, you're the next, you know, you're the one that, you know, you carry this on and to watch how he's able to deliver a story.
Mm-hmm.
His manager produced the vocals on my new record.
Wow.
Susie Reynolds.
Oh, that's a blessing.
Right.
Yeah.
So she was like, you know, when we were in the studio, she was just like really asking me to delve deeper into my authenticity and storytelling. And I have to say there were even moments where I, you know, where I felt like I need to go, how much deeper can I go? But that's what a great acting coach will do.
We'll do the same thing. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll challenge you to go deeper into your own authenticity.
Yeah. We're going to get into that too, because I was watching that too. Anyway, we have a lot of stuff to cover, but I was watching you on your reel. I was like, oh my God. I mean, for real, a real entertainer.
Thank you.
So far, good at everything I've seen. You're great at everything that you do. And we want to show more of it. We know you have a thing for Gershwin.
Oh, we do. Thailand, huh? You're going to Thailand right now? I'm going to Thailand.
So we do have a video, Gershwin for My Soul. Mm. Yeah, that's the same thing, the same song we actually used for the promo.
Oh, wow.
So I think they deserve to hear and actually get a visual of it as well.
The essence of courtship coming at you.
Let's play that, Gershwin for My Soul.
Listen to the drumbeat in my heart, can't deny it. Had me searching high and low for melodies and lines of love. I found Gershwin for my soul, and it's music for your soul. Now I know what Ira meant when he said, romancing, that love is here to stay, my dear, if we just keep on dancing. All my hopes and dreams unfold, sweet lyrics make my spirit whole. I need Gershwin for my soul, and it's music for your soul. Gershwin for my soul, music for your soul. Fascinating rhythm, wonderful, long ago. Girl.
Thank you.
Yes, that's beautiful. Such beautiful scenery.
Well, it was so amazing. We shot that in 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And I had a Russian producer and a Russian cinematographer who didn't speak English.
Wow. And how did
he made it happen? I was like, if you can get me these shots,
uh-huh.
I wrote the script, directed it.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you were the director.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And he made it happen.
It turned out wonderful.
I'm so happy.
Where did you shoot that? That was beautiful.
Phuket, Thailand.
Phuket, Thailand.
Yes.
The world renowned Elijah Rock.
Yeah. Wow.
And you went there and got them to do exactly what you needed to do.
I did. It was I didn't go there intending to shoot the music video.
Do tell.
Well, I was in Australia, and me and my cousin, and
yeah.
we decided we didn't want to come back home.
That's so nice. I love that.
So we looked at a map,
uh-huh.
and it said, you can just get from here to Bangkok for not a lot of money.
Okay.
So we did that,
uh-huh.
got to Bangkok, and was like, crazy over here. And so we were like, where can we go now to just hang out and chill? And so we hooked up with an Airbnb
okay.
in Phuket by mm-hmm. Nai Harn Beach,
uh-huh.
which is one of the premier beaches. We were like, how do we luck on this one?
Right.
We blessed up. And I'm there. And then I'm like, and I had the album, the Gershwin album was done and packaged.
Mm-hmm.
I brought like 50
with
records
you.
With me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, hey, I'm just, you know, meeting a few people, passing them
yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah.
I met this lady and she goes, you know, I know some cinematographers on the island that you might want to talk to.
Right.
And I said, yeah, how about I shoot my music video?
Yes.
She was like, I think that's a great idea.
Wow.
And I met with this French cinematographer and these Russian guys, and I went with the Russian guys. They could meet the budget. I said, I want a Thai boat. That
okay.
we can get that.
Okay.
I said, I want an elephant. They're like, we can get that.
Wow.
I said, can you give me a lemur? we actually took the lemur out because we didn't want to get in trouble
right,
with the you know with the animal activists.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, we had a lemur.
Oh my
in
God.
The video. and that villa was a blessing.
Yeah.
That was a gift.
And that so that wasn't the Airbnb. That was
no.
That was a villa.
That was a villa that
they just said, "Hey, use this."
No, these guys met me and they were like, "Yeah, we heard you on the radio because I was, you know, I was on the radio
yeah,
in town."
Yeah.
And this guy goes, "Yeah, I'm a contractor for this villa, up on the mountain called
oh
the View."
God.
And he goes, "Will you, you know, give me some love in the video?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah."
Yeah.
He said, "I'll give you 2 nights."
Oh my God! See.
That's the story of my life.
This is, you know, this is the classic, and your talent will make a way for you. This is what that is.
It is. I mean, this is really going to,
okay.
you're going to love this story.
I'm listening. I can't
so
wait.
I'm in Thailand,
uh-huh.
and they have these little stakeouts where they can stake you out.
Okay.
And, you know, the cops will pull you over, and if you don't have a helmet or you don't have, you know, proper ID, they may have you pay a fine.
Okay.
So, we were coming around the corner. We were going to the beach one day,
uh-huh.
and I came around the corner, and I saw a little stakeout. So I turned around
uh-huh.
right quick. Well, they saw me see them.
Okay.
And so I was on a moped, and I mean, I kicked it like 60 miles per hour. I turned it up as far as I cranked that thing, right? These two guys approached me. My cousin's behind me. He goes, they're coming, right? He's on his little bike. And all of a sudden, I look back. He's disappeared behind the shack. I don't know where he went.
Okay.
These two guys roll up on me with on a motorcycle.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
A motorcycle, two of them on a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And they're moving like 100 miles an hour.
Okay.
They pull me over.
Oh, Lord.
They go through all my bags, blah, blah, blah. They thought I had, you know, maybe something. I didn't
yeah.
have anything. I was clean.
Right, right.
So they said they were baffled because they thought maybe they were going to find something.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, follow me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they asked me, where were you going? I said, I'm going to the beach. I said, you know, I'm American and
yeah.
I'm confused.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
said, well, the beach was the way you were going. I said, oh. So they said, follow me. So I went, followed them back to the stakeout. And there was a colonel there.
Okay.
And the colonel was no frills.
Yeah.
This guy
yeah,
was,
yeah.
he was literally like, you know, no smiles.
Right, right. He's ready.
So I said to the cops
mm-hmm.
and the colonel, I said, you know, hey, guys, I was just on the radio a few days ago. I'm a singer.
Yeah.
This guy walks up to me. He gets straight in my face.
Okay.
And he goes, sing.
All right. Well, so that's what I do.
Yeah, I said, fly me to the moon.
Yes.
Let me play amongst the stars. And I did a little move.
A little bam.
He was like, you can go.
Yeah,
he said you could go.
Yeah,
and they were all smiling and laughing, and he let me go. And I went to the beach, and I said, "Man, that you talk about talent getting you out of a pickle."
I know, that's right, as it should. So
yeah.
So where was your cousin?
So while he's